is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run.
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White.
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Poyer cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon. Welcome to One Bills Drive. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show. We're here for the next 3 hours. John Murphy, Donald Jones here to talk about the Bills and the Patriots and where would you rather be, as the great Marv Levy says, Donald, really, than a couple of days away from this matchup, which means so much to the Bills, means a whole lot to the Patriots. We all know the history. I'm not writing off their chances. A lot of people are. But let's see. I can't wait for this kickoff on Sunday. I woke up, watched video last night, woke up today saying, okay, let's go. Let's get to the game. Now I'm in can't wait mode.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if the team has something in them where they look back at it at the first game and say, you know what, we can play with this team. We just didn't execute. I mean, that's really what it was. The Patriots don't have that much more talent. They have a Brady. They have Belichick. They have Gronk. To me, that is their team right now. We all see what happened tonight against the Dolphins when they didn't have Gronk on the team. They got beat up pretty bad by the Dolphins. So now that they have Gronk back, I want to see what the Bills will look back at the first game and see if they can make those changes. And that's just to start the game. Then how do you actually make those adjustments at halftime? As we all know that the Patriots make all types of adjustments on offense and defense at halftime, and they do something totally different than they were doing in the first half.
Yeah.
You know, so it's crazy because playing the Patriots will really put so much strain on the coaching staff, so much strain on the players. You know, the players, you just got to go out there and execute. It's really the coaching staff to make different adjustments and things that you need to make so that you put the players in the best position to make those plays.
Especially 3 weeks apart. I mean, this is not like they're, you know, frequently you get to these season series, a couple of teams, division rivals, and you look back at the first game when you play them again, but you look back from the standpoint of, you know, that was 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, you know, and they had this player, and now that player's hurt, and we had him, and now he's out. Not so this time, you know, not so this time at all. This is 3 weeks apart. By the way, it'll be worse better or worse next week when they play the Dolphins. It's essentially the same team going at it 3 weeks apart. And that game is, you know, a 23-3 loss to the Patriots. Yes, another one in the string of Bills losses to the Patriots, and they can't beat the Patriots and blah, 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 blah. That game is interesting, though. And there's, you know, as I went back and thought about that game last night and even again today, I thought there's enough there to make you think that there's a chance for the Buffalo, and most of it resides in the first half. 66-yard drive off the opening kickoff for the Bills, all the way down the field, and then Tyrod inexplicably throws that interception to Eric Lee, snuffs out that drive, and the Bills never got a whiff of the end zone again after that. In the meantime, Patriots held the 9 points in the first half back on December 3rd. Mm-hmm. I recall leaving the radio broadcast booth, seeing Bob Soci, my counterpart, whose booth is two doors away, saying, Bob, we got a live game here. And, you know, he likes competitive games too. He said, yeah, this is a live game. And, of course, the Patriots take the third quarter kickoff, march it downfield, score, get the ball back again, march it downfield and score, and that's it. I mean, all of a sudden it was 23-3, and that's all. So there's a lot going on in that first game is my point. The Bills' first drive, and then what happened after that. I need some answers about that, and I'll go back and look at video. And then the Bills' overall pretty good defensive effort, especially first half, and then those two long scoring drives by New England. A lot going on in that game, which I think sets up well for this week when you start to think about what could change, as you said, or, you know, what has to change from the Bills' standpoint. I think there's a lot going on here.
You know, the Bills, there's a lot going on here, and for me, the biggest story is Gronk. And I know people want to know, well, is the biggest story because they're going to try to get revenge on Gronk? No, not at all. The biggest story is how do you slow down Gronk? This dude is playing lights out right now. You saw it against the Steelers. You saw how much he means to that team when they didn't have him against the Dolphins. We saw how he actually took over in the second half here a couple of weeks ago against the Bills. So Gronk is the key to that offense. Without Gronk, Brady, that offense is just not the same. He doesn't have the person who he can just go to at any, really any given moment in the course of the game to pick up a first down or a big play or whenever they need something like that. Gronk, how do they cover Gronk? That's the biggest question mark on defense. How do you cover Gronk? Now, obviously, you have Brandon Cooks there. Brandon Cooks, for me, is another key matchup that you have to pay attention to. If you let him get behind the defense, it can get ugly. What happened in the second half of the first game was they were trying to make sure that they weren't giving things up on the outside, on the perimeters, and they left the middle of the field wide open for Gronk. And then he just started to take his will, you know, impose his will among the game, and it just got ugly for the Bills. But ultimately, they still held him to 23 points. So how do they slow down Gronk is the biggest question.
Gronk, Rob Gronkowski, coming off his really the two best games of his career, at least recently anyway. 147 yards, 9 catches against the Bills 3 weeks ago. Had the the week after that, he had the suspension one game. They lose badly, as Donald said, to the Dolphins. And then last week against the Steelers, 168 yards, 315 yards receiving in his last two games. He's doing what he does, too. There's nothing special here, right? He's kind of working the over-the-middle stuff, making himself a big target that he is, providing an outlet for Brady. Brady will take advantage of that. And there's a variety of ways to handle it. I don't know, you know, just as people say, well, you can't go in thinking you're going to shut down Brady. I get that. You probably can't go in thinking we're going to shut down Gronk, because if you take him away, as I think the Bills found out 3 weeks ago, then you leave yourself exposed on the outside. 3 weeks ago, I think they tried to take Brandon Cooks away and maybe had a modicum of success doing that, and all of a sudden Gronk is open all day over the middle.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one to handle. They're a very talented offense. They are a team, overall offense especially, that is used to playing with each other. You know, they speak shorthand to each other. I'm sure they know exactly what they want to do and pretty much go out and do it. Great coaching at all levels, not just Belichick. Matt Patricia is outstanding as a coordinator. Josh McDaniels as the offensive coordinator. Dante Scarnecchia handles the offensive line. He's been around there forever. Ivan Fears coaching wide receivers. Did you have him when you were there? Was he there?
Ivan Fears is coaching wide receivers?
Isn't he, or is he running backs? He's on the staff.
He's on running backs, I
okay.
believe.
He's been there forever.
The wide receivers coach, his name, I was just talking about this last night.
Well, let me look that up for you. Yeah, Ivan Fears, my bad, is running backs coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Brian Flores coaches linebackers. Let me see here. McDaniels. Chad O'Shea coaches receivers.
O'Shea.
Was he there when you were there?
Yes, he was. He's been there for a while.
Yeah.
Those guys are in a nice job, man. They, for the most part, coaches in the NFL bounce around.
Yeah.
You are lucky if you get a job like that in New England where you've been dominant for a long time. You know that you're there. You're going to make this amount of money every year unless you're getting raises. And unless you do something wrong, you're going to be there. You don't have to really worry about bouncing around like the rest of the coaches in the league.
And when they leave, sometimes, like Josh McDaniels, they come back.
They come back.
Dante Scarnecchia, I think, retired, and he's back coaching the offensive line.
Coach, my bad. You know, I just wanted to go take this opportunity, but my bad. I want to come back. Can we make that happen?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. There's something, right? We know that. The Patriots, they've dominated the AFC East now. They've won 9 consecutive division titles, which is a ridiculous stat. 9 consecutive AFC East division titles. Not just the Bills that they torment. They've been doing it to everybody in the division for a long time. But we want to get to that on our Twitter poll today. And we know the Patriots pretty well here, right, in Buffalo. We know who they are. We know who the personnel is. We know how they play. We know their history. We know the ups and downs of their history, including, you know, trouble with the league on Spygate, trouble with the league on Deflategate, all of that stuff. We know who they are. We want to get a sense from you on what has made them so dominant in the division. That is our Twitter poll today for the Patriots. 9 consecutive AFC East Division titles. They've clinched it already again this year. What do you think is the reason for that? On Twitter, we put it this way. Patriots have won 9 straight division titles. Their dominance in the AFC East is because of what? Let us know what you think. The phone lines are open for that, 803-0550, toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550, or vote on Twitter. On Twitter, the dominance of the Patriots in the AFC East 9 straight division titles is because of what? Right now on Twitter, 54% of you say it's because of Brady. 22% of you say it's because of the overall ineptitude of their division rivals, the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets. 19% of you say it's because of Bill Belichick. 5% say it's for another reason. Let us know what you think. The Patriots, 9 straight division titles, their dominance in the division is because of what? Brady, Belichick, the rest of the division is struggling, or something else? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I'm surprised. I wouldn't disagree with that Twitter poll, at least the early results here, Donald, but I'm surprised that more people have not picked Belichick, because it's a hard call for me. What makes them so great? Belichick, Brady, they're sort of joined at the hip. But I'm surprised more people don't give Belichick credit for their dominance over the division.
Yeah, I think because people just look at Brady and him being the one, you know, even if you had another coach, with Brady on the field, he's the one that makes everything go. He controls the offense, all of that stuff. But really, Bill Belichick, is the one that makes certain moves. I mean, he's like their general manager as well. He makes certain moves, brings, you know, different players in. He's the one that's making these adjustments at halftime. He's the one that does different things to teams that really can confuse teams. He puts a lot of pressure on your team. This is going to be an interesting debate, though, for forever, really. When those two retire, why were the Patriots so dominant? Was it because of Belichick? Was it because of Brady? Was it because of them together? That's going to be a good debate. In this Twitter poll, I think I might go other, you know, and it might be actually in the category with the rest of the team's ineptitude, but I think I might go other and just say because the rest of the teams haven't found a franchise quarterback, and that's just what it is. You had the rest of these teams, while Brady has been in this division, none of the rest of the teams have found a true franchise quarterback that you could say, man, this dude is, he is the real deal. For a decade and a half, you have all of the rest of these teams looking for quarterbacks and haven't been able to find that. Because of that, and we all know the quarterback position is so important in this game. Because they haven't been able to find that, you won't be able to match what the Patriots are doing.
If the Bills and the Jets and the Dolphins are looking for the next Tom Brady, they're going to be very disappointed.
Yeah.
There will be another Tom Brady, right? Maybe arguably greatest quarterback of all time. I would argue that he is the greatest of all time. So forget about that. And I'm trying to think over this period of New England dominance, who have been the other franchise-type quarterbacks or at least franchise-hopeful quarterbacks from those other three teams. I mean, who are we talking about? Ryan Tannehill in Miami?
That's it. Yeah, that they –
Mark Sanchez with the Jets? I mean, obviously it didn't pan out, but who did they put their hopes on? I mean, even the Dolphins, you know, going with Tannehill as their potential franchise quarterback is a little bit iffy, I think.
I don't know if he's
certainly not in Brady's class, and I don't know if he's an elite-level, top-tier quarterback.
Right. So it's like while he's been here, they have the best quarterback arguably of all time, and the rest of these teams have quarterbacks that they're just hoping is a good quarterback. And when you're doing that, it's tough to really to overtake that throne and be the divisional champs or something like that. It's tough to do when they have the best of all time, and then they're putting other pieces around him, and they have that coach.
Yeah.
You know, but that position, the quarterback position, really changes everything when you have a guy like Brady.
When the Bills have hung their hat on who? Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, off the veteran category, and who else? Trent Edwards as a draft pick. I mean, they just haven't – Bills haven't found a guy either. So maybe what – are you saying that Brady is the difference, or are you saying that the other team's inability to find somebody is the difference?
I think that's what it is.
Because I don't know if you'll ever find another Brady. If you think you're going to – if you think you're going to go into the 2018 NFL draft and we've got our Tom Brady, I think you're kidding yourself. You're fooling yourself.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to find – it will be a long time till you find another Brady, a guy who wins five titles or something like that. But you look at teams right now around the league – that feel like they have their franchise quarterback. Even the greats. You look at the Packers with Aaron Rodgers. There's a big difference in that team without Aaron Rodgers. The Saints and Drew Brees. You go down south with Matt Ryan and all of those guys. These teams in this division have not been able to find that. You look at out west with the Rams. They drafted
Jared Goff
first round. Last year he didn't do anything. But this year he's coming into his own. Now they have the coach that came in with that system. He's coming into his own, and now look at that team. They're in the playoffs. They're playing very well. They added some pieces around them, but they feel like they had their guy moving forward. Who knows in the future if he'll win a title or two or however many. But here in this division, I don't think that you could even say these teams have found that guy in the last 17 years. They have not found that guy. The Eagles feel like Carson Wentz is that guy.
Right.
That guy is going to win us some Super Bowls in the future. None of the teams in this division have been able to do that.
What do you think? Give us a call. Lines are open. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. You can vote in our Twitter poll. What's the biggest reason for the Patriots' dominance in the AFC East? Is it Belichick? Is it Brady? Is it the overall ineptitude of the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets? Something else in mind. Give us a call and let us know what you think or vote in our Twitter poll. Here at One Bills Drive, Bills practicing as we speak across the way inside the AdPro Sports Training Center. As far as practice participation, looks like Kelvin Benjamin getting some work in today after no work yesterday. He still got that knee. He was called day-to-day yesterday by head coach Sean McDermott. All the same for E.J. Gaines, getting some practice work in today after no practice yesterday. Saw him take some individual drills. Nick O'Leary back at practice today. Kyle Williams back at practice. And Chris Brown reports that Andre Holmes, wide receiver, does not appear to be practicing. We hope to get a post-practice update on how these injuries are sorting themselves out.
Yeah, you talk about the receiver position. They need an Andre Holmes. He has a couple of touchdowns, and he's very good on special teams as well. He's a key part of that. Kelvin Benjamin, you need him out there. You need your receivers at full strength, really, to play against a Patriots team. I'm looking at a stat right now. Antonio Brown, with his 1,500 yards this year, is more than four teams have gotten from all of their receivers. The Bills, the Bears, yeah. Browns, and Ravens, all of their receivers combined go for – the Ravens have the most with 1,528 yards. Antonio Brown has 1,533 yards.
Yeah,
so,
those passing attack.
Yeah.
It's been brutal. 32nd in the league now, dead last in the league.
Right, exactly. So when you talk about trying to beat a Patriots team, I know your formula for winning is what it is, but it's hard to beat them when you're dead last in passing. It's really hard to do.
As far as covering them, E.J. Gaines back practicing on what appears to be a limited basis, and Bills are 7-3 when E.J. Gaines is a starter. That's something. That means something to me. He's a fine player. I don't think he's a Pro Bowl caliber player, E.J. Gaines, but I think he's a pretty good player that they acquired in a trade back in August. And 7 wins, 3 losses when he starts, that says something to me.
E.J. Gaines is one of those players where you're not really going to hear much from him. Like, you hear a lot about Tre'Davious right now. He has some interceptions, but E.J. Gaines is that type of guy who makes key tackles. He makes key plays and key parts of the game. And it's not necessarily the biggest play that jumps out, yeah. Or he forced a fumble or something like that. But it's like he got a tackle on 3rd and 2 and stopped him. Those are the types of plays that he makes. He's one of those unsung heroes on a team. And you talk about them being 7-3 when he's in the lineup. Yeah, he's definitely one of those unsung heroes. There's a huge difference when he's not in the lineup mm-hmm. for this team. And you have to put a Sharice Wright or somebody else out there. It's not that those guys aren't as good as he is, because talented-wise, they are, you know. But he just understands the system, and he brings something else to the game. And it's good to have he and Tre'Davious both as your starters, and to have Leonard Johnson and Sharice Wright both playing nickel, or if you ever need to go dime or something like that.
E.J. Gaines left last Sunday's game against the Dolphins with a knee injury, and as we said, he looks to be practicing on a limited basis today. On the show today, speaking of Sharice Wright, he's coming on the show with us. We start at the bottom of this hour with our first guest, and it is Tracy Wolfson from the NFL on CBS, the sideline reporter. You've seen her. She did the Bills' Thursday night game against the Jets. She did the Bills' first matchup with New England 3 weeks ago. She did Sunday's game, Sunday 4 o'clock game, the Patriots and the Steelers. Tracy Wolfson joins us on the line at 12:30 today. 1 o'clock, the business of the NFL with Andrew Brandt. Got a lot to say about Commissioner Roger Goodell's new contract extension, about the situation in Carolina with ownership in question. Mm-hmm. Andrew Brandt joins us at 1. Sharice Wright, when practice ends, we think it'll be around 1:30 or so. Bill's nickel corner and fill-in corner when EJ's out. Sharice mm-hmm. Wright scheduled to join us around 1:30. And the great Reuben Brown joins us, the perennial Pro Bowl guard for the Bills and the Chicago Bears. He'll be in studio with us at 2 o'clock today. In the meantime, you're welcome to join us, 803-0550, the number toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Mm-hmm. Or you can join us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Vote in our Twitter poll. Patriots have won 9 straight division title. Their dominance is because of what? Is it Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, the ineptitude of the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets, or something else? Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. We'll start with Ron calling from Alden. Go ahead, Ron. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. Merry Christmas to you and all your fans on the radio.
Merry Christmas, Ron.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks. This is how I feel. It's Tom Brady. It always has been Tom Brady. And let me just throw a few stats out there. Look at the record for Belichick in Cleveland. 5 years, 1 winning season. First year in New England, 5-11. Second year started off 0-2. Talk is he might have been about to get fired. Mo Lewis changed the course of history. And all of a sudden, they went from 0-2 to winning the Super Bowl. He does not become a super coach overnight. I'm sorry. Winning 3 out of 4 Super Bowls, after statistically, it never was any good anywhere else. His records were terrible in Cleveland. If he was such a super coach, he would have had them all over the place. So, I don't know. In the 2 years they did not have Brady, they did not make the playoffs. I know one was 11-5, but they did not make the playoffs. And that's just what I'm saying. If you look at the prehistory, and I'll say a lot of that for Marv Levy, too, is Marv Levy was the right coach at the right time, but he rode the coattails of a great team, and it wasn't him that put the K-gun together for McKellar, and he wasn't him that decided on the no-huddle offense. So I think great players make great coaches, not really ever the other way around. Thank you.
Thank you. Really good points, Ron. Tough to argue any of those points.
That is a great point, and that's one of those debates right there. You'll hear different things from different people. because I've always felt like this is a player's game. It really is a player's game. The coaches can coach, they can have their systems, but they always say, I need the players to fit my system. Now, I might be biased because I was a player, you know, but I do feel like without the right players, without the right mentality on your team, you're just not going to win games.
Well, wait a minute. You got two different things there. What's mentality have to do with it? I think mentality is part of the coach's job. Setting the tone. Here's who we are. This is what we do. This is our standard. Mm-mm. We're watching it in place right here. What do you mean by mentality?
Mentality, there are certain players. Like you look at Seattle and their Legion of Boom. And when they had Marshawn Lynch, he brought that mentality to that team. It wasn't Pete Carroll. You know, Pete Carroll has things. He does things around the building where they have fun and all of that stuff. But the players on the field are the ones that set the tone. And you're talking about around the locker room and culture and all of that stuff. I'm talking about when we get on the field, all that culture stuff doesn't even matter. This is how we play on the field.
It doesn't matter. What do you mean it doesn't matter?
The culture is how we handle things around the building, how we prepare, all of that stuff. When we get on the field,
that's important.
No, it's important. But when we get on the field, this is how we play the game. Daryl Talley and all of those guys, they had their own individual mentalities, and they collectively made that team who it was. And there are plenty of guys that will tell you, without Daryl Talley and his mentality and how he played the game, he helped to get a lot of guys in a position. He brought that mentality, and it cultivated around the rest of the team.
I think you're underselling the importance of coaching.
I'm not underselling the importance of coaching. Coaches are important. They're the ones that bring the schemes and all of that stuff. But ultimately, they will always tell you the players have to play. You got to play. The coaches are not out there playing.
Who had better talent on the field last Sunday, the Bills or the Dolphins?
The Dolphins.
So how did that turn out?
Their quarterback didn't want to be there.
I mean,
he threw it up. He threw the ball up. I mean, the Dolphins definitely had better talent. I understand what you're saying. There's importance to the culture change around the locker room, around the building, the way you prepare, and all of that stuff. The best coaches, and Coach McDermott always, this is about our players. Our players are the ones that won the game.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's always going to be that. Coaches, that's why they draft certain players to fit their systems, because I have to have the players that can do what I'm asking them to do.
Let's go to Sean. Hello, Sean. Welcome. You're on the air with us. Sean, help me out here. Are you there, Sean? I can almost hear you. Sean, pick up the phone. Hey, Sean, what happened?
Yes. I'm going to go with other. You know, it takes a team effort, you know, player, coaches, you know, the system that you fall under. And, you know, I kind of agree with Donald. With, you know, you have to have a good quarterback. And you can kind of see that with the 49er, with Jimmy. Jimmy started playing. That team is looking totally different with Jimmy playing quarterback, you know. So I think it's a combination why, you know, the Patriots are as successful as they are is, you know, a combination of coaches and player and the system that they are implementing on the field.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's a combination. We structure these Twitter polls to promote discussion, and I guess we're asking you to sort it out, though. I mean, what is the greatest influence, the biggest reason, not the only reason for the Patriots' success, but the biggest reason? I would argue that it's Tom Brady. I think it is. I think what the last time I looked, 54% of respondents did. But I wouldn't underestimate what the poll say, 15% said Belichick. I think he and his staff have structured that thing, brought in the players they want, 19% Bill Belichick, brought in the players they want, put in the system they want, and got everybody to buy in. Who's got more talent on defense, Donald, the Patriots or the Dolphins last week, you know? The Dolphins do.
Yeah.
I mean, but the defense for the Patriots does a great job in the red zone, and they've played well enough to win those games this year. I wouldn't underestimate what the coaching can do for a team, and especially a team that doesn't have, you know, I got to look. How many Pro Bowl players on the Dolphins defense? One?
Yeah, one of their safeties.
Yeah.
You know, I think coaches are very important. Bill Belichick is probably going to go down as the best coach to ever coach to this point, maybe ever. He might be the best coach to ever do it. But look at the difference in the team when they didn't have Gronk. In that game against the Dolphins, when they didn't have Gronk, they got beat up bad because they didn't have that player, that dude on the field that they could rely on, that they could get the ball to at any given time. Coach Belichick could try to do a bunch of different things. Ultimately, I don't have the personnel that I need. I don't have my guy out there on the field making the plays. The players got to make the plays. The coaches are very important in everything that they do and everything that they – and making sure that your players have the right approach to the game, they prepare like they're supposed to prepare and all of that stuff. But when we get on the field, you got to make plays for me.
Yeah.
If you're not making plays, then we're going to lose the game.
I just look, no Pro Bowlers on the Dolphins defense.
Really?
No Pro Bowlers. Matthew Slater made Pro Bowl on a special team, and I think three others on offense.
So you're talking about the Dolphins or the Patriots? Matthew Slater.
I'm talking about the Patriots.
Oh, you said the Dolphins.
Oh, sorry. No, I meant the Patriots.
Oh, okay.
No Pro Bowlers on the Patriots defense, and yet there they are with all those wins and another division title.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's indicative of how much the scheme is, how much the collection of talent is, and how the coaching staff on defense does a great job of putting people in position to succeed there. A call here from Joe in Massachusetts. Hello, Joe. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm actually in the Buffalo area on business.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Listening to your broadcast.
Great.
I think it has a lot to do with consistency. I think I hate to say all of the above, but we love consistency in New England. So, you know, you have Belichick and Brady, and on the player side, Amendola and Gronk, and you got Edelman, who obviously is out this year. But then, you know, Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels and Dante Scarnecchia, it's the whole package. I really do think it's the whole package.
Yeah. I just go back to the quarterback position. And I think because the rest of the teams have not found that true franchise quarterback, and it doesn't have to be Brady, but a guy who you could say is a franchise quarterback. You look at other divisions. Let's look at the NFC South. You look at the four quarterbacks with Cam Newton, Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, and Jameis Winston. That division is really up and down. Not up and down, but the division – it's not like, well, one team is dominating this division every single year. And that's because all of those teams, or at least three of them, have had a guy who you could say, all right, that dude is playing at MVP caliber level. And they have three of them that have won MVPs in the past, you know. So I think that's what makes that division closer. They have those quarterbacks. And then they could build the team around those quarterbacks. These teams in this division have not found that guy. So you're stuck trying to build a team around a guy who's not a franchise quarterback. Year after year after year, we got to find a bunch of different pieces that will help this quarterback and uplift this quarterback. It's hard to find a Tom Brady,
mm-hmm.
but you need a quarterback that can actually uplift your team. You know, you need a quarterback that can make plays and make big throws in key situations. And because the rest of these teams haven't done it, the Patriots have been on top of this division.
And it's important. We're not just talking about a team that's won a couple of division titles here. Or yeah, they've had a nice little run. They've had a dominant run, nine consecutive division titles.
Right.
They've had a dominant run for almost 20 years, unprecedented in the history of the league. You hate to admit it here because we've been victimized by it here
right.
for 17 years. But it's there, and it matters. And, you know, by the way, I don't think it – I'm not at all saying the Bills can't defeat them Sunday. I think they could.
Right.
But I just want to kind of drill down and figure out exactly what it is that people think has made them so dominant. Dennis calling from Florida has a thought on this. Dennis, go ahead.
Hi, fellas. First of all, Merry Christmas to all of Buffalo Bills fans.
Thanks, Merry Dennis.
Christmas.
You too.
I want to give my take on taking Gronkowski out of the game.
Okay.
For 22 years in the area of high school football, my thought was Gronkowski gets his 9 or 10 catches, and he runs rampant over the defensive secondary.
Mm-hmm.
How about taking the best athlete you've got, tight end, big man, 6'6", former quarterback, put him right in the face of Gronkowski every time he puts his hand down on the line of scrimmage. After he takes his five-yard chuck.
Who are we talking about?
Yeah.
I put a strong side safety or the free safety on him and let him be the backup behind him.
Who are we talking about?
Gronkowski.
Yeah. Would you say taking your best man? Who do you have in mind on the Bills roster? Anybody?
The tight end.
Charles Clay?
Athlete. He's smart. Thomas.
Logan Thomas. You want Logan Thomas to cover Rob Gronkowski?
I want Logan Thomas to get in his face.
Oh, you're saying put him at defensive end and hit him.
Trail him. No, trail him. And I would he'd be the underneath coverage, and I would have a strong side safety for the deeper coverage. Because you're going to put a safety over there anyway. If you put a cornerback there, he's going to get beat up. None of them can stay with Gronk that way. He's just so strong.
Went
off the ball. I would be in his face.
Well, I disagree. I don't think it's happening. I mean, I think it'll be a mixture of stuff with Gronkowski, including a cornerback like Tre'Davious White, who actually got he paid the price for how aggressive he was with Rob Gronkowski.
Right.
He was pretty aggressive. And, yeah, he probably held him a lot during the game and got away with it for the most part until Gronkowski took matters into his own hand. No, I wouldn't put a guy who's never played a snap on defense and expect him to, to cover Rob
Gronkowski. Want somebody to get in his face, it's going to be a guy like Matt Milano.
Yeah.
Who can actually cover but also plays linebacker. He can get his hands on him, and then you can get a safety over top of him.
Let's go to John calling from Ontario. John, welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, Murph. Hi, Donald. How you doing?
Thank you. Good, thank you.
That's good. I'm going to vote for other on the poll there, why the Patriots are so dominant. And I'm actually just kidding here, but I'm going to say it's because they cheat. Got caught twice. How many other times have they done stuff like that? They're just kind of sneaky and underhanded, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. I really don't think that's the reason it's been dominant. I think it's all of the above, really.
Yeah.
The division has been weak. You know, the Bills, the Jets, and the Dolphins haven't – I can't remember when they had a good team. It's been a while. Like, maybe the whole length of time, like 2000. And the great quarterback. Belichick, I think, all the experts say he's a good coach. I don't know anything about coaching. I've never done it. But I got to agree with, you know, what the experts say, that he's a great coach. And, you know, Robert Kraft is a great owner, provides Belichick with whatever he needs in the way of money and the people that surround Brady. So it's a whole bunch of things tied in together, really.
Okay, thanks, John. I don't think you can cheat your way to 9 consecutive division titles, but certainly they've been caught.
Well, yeah, they've been caught a couple of times doing different things, and it is what it is. I mean, unless they get caught again, you just got to take it at face. They won 9 straight. They have 5 Super Bowls. They're always in the playoffs. Even if they don't win the division, they're in the playoffs. They're typically right in the AFC Championship game.
Right.
I mean,
you can't cheat your way to that. You can maybe get an edge here or there.
Here or there.
And I think they probably have from time to time. The weather's going to be okay Sunday in Foxborough. High of 40 degrees, partly cloudy skies, 10% chance of precipitation, light winds just 8 miles per hour. Craig Rolstadt will be the referee for the Bills and the New England Patriots. We're going to talk more about this game with you. We'll take more phone calls on the biggest reason for the Patriots' dominance in the AFC East. We're going to take a couple of minute break here. When we come back, we're going to talk with Tracy Wolfson, who covers the NFL on CBS. She'll be on the sidelines Sunday afternoon for the Bills and the Patriots, and she'll join us coming up next right here on the show. It is John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio, and joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. She is the lead reporter for the NFL on CBS, and she'll be on the sidelines this Sunday when the Bills take on the New England Patriots in Foxborough. Really happy to have Tracy Wolfson of CBS Sports on the line with us. Tracy, it's John Murphy and Donald up here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us today.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
I want to ask you about the big game coming up. And I'm not talking about Bills and Patriots. I'm talking about Michigan basketball against Alabama A&M coming up tonight. Everybody in the country is riveted on that one, right? You can't wait for that one, I'm sure.
I will watch it, believe it or not. You got it.
So will I, as a matter of fact. Yeah, Donald thinks I'm nuts, but I'll watch that game. Hey, Tracy. Of course you will. Hey, the Bills going up against the Patriots. You've been around the Patriots a lot lately, including the game 3 weeks ago between the Bills and New England. What did you think of that game, especially at halftime when it was a 9-3 lead for New England? What were your thoughts at that time about that game?
Yeah, you know, I felt as though the defense did exactly what it needed to do, right? And, 9-3, you're like, I'm in a great position. But I think, you know, that second half got away from them. And that's the key with the Bills. I mean, you need to put together two solid hands. You know, we saw in the Miami game, too, and just the way that Tyrod and this offense played in that first half, they needed to play in the second half. And so, you know, I think if you can match that, you know, offense with your defense, you know, and just continuously play that way for all four quarters, I think you have a chance. And we know the way to beat the Patriots is keep Tom Brady off the field. So, you know, they did that in the first half of that game, certainly.
Tracy, were you shocked after the first half of that game, the fact that the Bills were able to hold them to 9 points?
You know, I don't think I was. You know, I've been impressed with the Bills' defense, you know, throughout this season. So, I have not been overly impressed with the Patriots this season. So I was not shocked, really, where we were at that point. I mean, I think if you ask CBS, we were very happy with what the score was. We had certainly kept the audience going. But, right. You know, I think that I was not overly shocked. But like I said, the thing is continuously doing it because you know that the Patriots make unbelievable adjustments at halftime, you know, with Belichick at the helm. So I think, you know, I was not really surprised, but I think that's exactly how they have to, you know, go into this game as well.
Hey, Tracy, you said something a second ago about not being overly impressed with the Patriots this season. It wasn't that long ago, and I'm not saying you, but many observers thought, well, this Patriots team, they might run the table with all the additions they've made with Brandon Cooks. I mean, there were very high expectations for the Patriots going into the year, and in some sense, even though, you know, they've clinched the division and seem to be on their way to home field through the AFC playoffs, in some sense, I feel like they aren't as good as many people thought going into the year anyway.
Yeah, and I would agree. And we saw it the first game of the season with Kansas City and how they were able to expose them a little bit. We saw the Patriots' defense, and certainly they're shoring things up a little bit, but they're not the Patriots' defense of old, and there's certainly some holes in it and that can be exposed. And I think offensively, the loss of Edelman is a huge part of this offense. They do have so many pieces, but those pieces have to be clicking at all times. So if you keep Tom Brady off the field, don't allow him to make those, you know, ridiculous comeback plays and those drives at the end of the game. And, you know, if you're able to do that, you can score off this defense. So we've seen it, you know, we saw Kansas City, we saw what Miami could do. The Steelers had it. The Steelers outplayed them last week. And so I think, you know, this is a vulnerable Patriots team. You know, you certainly need to take away Gronkowski, and he's been playing tremendous ball as of late, but you know, I do think that there are some holes in this Patriots team.
Tracy, isn't it amazing that we're talking about a Patriots team like they're falling off, but they only lost three games this year?
I don't think let's look at the competition also. So I don't think that they're falling off, but I just think more so than ever, because we went into the season saying, right, they're not going to lose a game.
Mm-hmm.
We thought they'd go undefeated throughout the year, right? Mm-hmm. And so losing three games is crazy when it comes to the New England Patriots, especially with all the perceptions going into the season.
And Tracy, when you think about it, when you think about this Patriots team this year, there's a certain amount of resourcefulness that I find myself admiring, as hard as it is from Buffalo. You know, they find ways to win. A lot of that has to do with Brady, but they're kind of resourceful even when the chips are down, when things don't look very good for them.
You're right, and they keep just finding guys and plugging them in. That's what's unbelievable. They have one of your guys as well, and Gillisley, who I believe we will certainly see in this game, even though he's been inactive over the past few weeks. But you know, that's what they do. They pull and plug, and they pull and plug, and it's not necessarily that star guy, even though they did go out and get a Brandon Cooks, which should help them in the future. I don't know. You know, right now I think it helps them to a point, but they didn't have a full off season with him. So that's what they do. They just kind of reload, but they reload in such a, you know, a smart way, and so that's what makes them so dangerous.
Tracy Wolfson is on the line with us, the lead reporter for the NFL on CBS. She'll be on the call of the game Sunday when the Bills play the Patriots. Your take on the Bills going into this game, Tracy, obviously in desperate need of wins to get to the playoffs. Are they playoff worthy? I mean, if they had that kind of a season in your mind?
I do. I mean, look, I think that bottom bunch of teams right now, you know, are all bunched up. So it's whoever wants it the most right now. I do think they're playoff worthy. I think it would be a tremendous story, you know, what Sean McDermott's been able to do in his first year, you know, not making the playoffs since 99, having the opportunity, what it would do for a fan base. But let's be realistic that this Bills team is in a rebuilding mode. So there's the future in mind, too. So, you know, while there would be disappointment not making the playoffs, I feel the Bills are in a really good position for the future, and they're only building and getting better. And I love what Sean McDermott's done. And I always say, like, when we sit down and we have a chance to meet with these coaches and these players, you walk away and you get a feeling about them. And I believe that translates onto the field, and it translates to the team. And we walked away from the first meeting with Sean McDermott, and we said, you know, this is going to be a good Bills team, not necessarily only for this year, but for this year and going forward, just the feeling we got from Sean McDermott and what he's putting in place. So I do believe that, you know, if you take care of business, and not necessarily only this week, obviously, would be huge, but next week, which is key, and let some things fall into place, I think you do deserve to be in the playoffs.
Tracy, what's your perception of Tyrod Taylor and the whole situation to bench him a few weeks back and then how he's played since that whole thing went down?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you've been around Tyrod. You know, he just kind of keeps to himself. But I think I'm sure there's a little bit of revenge in his mind, go back out there and prove something. Look, he's playing for a job, whether it's a job with the Bills or a job with another team. So he can't kind of take that slight and get down on himself. He has nothing else to do but to take it, run with it, and show, you know, what he's got. I think the whole situation, going back to it a little bit, I think there was a part of maybe Sean McDermott and the brass and whatever it is who said, you know what, we need to see what we have in Nathan Peterman, and we need to get him into a live game to do that. And they've never been in those kind of blowout situations to just kind of throw him out there either. So they decided to do it there. And there's a lot of second guessing. And I don't personally think it was the right move at the right time, but I do understand maybe if that was the thought process, I get it and I understand it.
Hey, Tracy,
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Before we let you go, I do want to ask you about a feature interview you've done with your colleague, Tony Romo, for the CBS Sports Network show, We Need to Talk. What did you get from Tony? What did you get from him that you don't know from working with him every week?
I didn't get anything really different. I think I've been around him so much. I know a lot, and I think that was the point of the interview, just to bring that to light and show him just, you know, in a casual setting. But I think it shows how happy he is right now and what he's doing, and also how competitive he is as a guy, not only in the football field, but in the booth as well, wanting to be the best of the best. And I think it showed on that couch, kind of what he's like in the booth, where he's just chill, relaxed, and talking football.
Well, you guys do it great. You do it better than anybody else, you and Tony Romo, and, of course, Jim Nantz. We appreciate you spending a few minutes with us, Tracy. We'll see you in Foxborough on Sunday. Thank you very much.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks. Tracy Wolfson from the NFL on CBS, lead reporter. She'll be in the sideline for the Bills and the New England Patriots Sunday at 1 o'clock on CBS. Tracy joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. We're back with more in a moment. John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me four calling birds, four calling birds, four calling birds.
How many takes did that take?
Oh, man, I knew it.
That was Donald Jones a couple of years ago.
I saw them working on that in the office yesterday, and I knew it was going to show up on there at some point. That's hilarious.
Yeah, have you done much singing?
You know, I can do it right now, you know.
Unforgettable, right?
Unforgettable. Yeah, you know, that's funny, though. I remember the day we did that.
Leotis stole the show, as I recall.
Leotis did steal the show on that.
Yeah. What was his line? Which one did he have?
I just remember everybody talking and tweeting about Leotis. Yeah.
What was that? 6-7 years ago, probably.
That was 2011, I think.
Wow. Yeah. Long time ago. You haven't aged a bit. That's Donald singing his part in the 12 Days of Buffalo Bills Christmas from 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
That was good. Good times.
It was.
Hey, what makes the thanks again to Tracy Wolfson for joining us, as a matter of fact. Our conversation with you kind of centers on what's the biggest reason the Patriots have dominated the AFC East the way they have. I was looking at numbers during the break, Donald, and dominate they have. What did I lose my numbers? Oh, here it is. I got it right here. All right, 9 straight AFC East division titles, right? Over the since the 2002 season, Patriots, 218 wins, 67 losses. Only two other teams have a winning percentage better. In the division, in the AFC East, since the beginning of the 0-1 season, New England with a 774 winning percentage. Next, Pittsburgh, and this is all across all divisions, Pittsburgh 705. So way ahead of everybody else. Within the AFC East, since 0-1, the Patriots with a 774 winning percentage. Next is the Jets with a 456 winning percentage. Then the Dolphins 417, and then the Buffalo Bills 363.
Jesus.
14 division titles. 14 playoff bursts since realignment in 2002. 9 straight division titles. We talked about that. It's crazy. I mean, they own this division, and they have for a long time. What do you think about that? What's the biggest reason? Here's Gary in Pennsylvania with some thoughts on that. Gary, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Merry Christmas to all the listeners and to you guys.
Thanks,
I love
Gary.
The show. My take would be in the other category. I'm thinking the scouting and talent evaluation teams that are there at the onset with the Patriots. If you go all the way back to the Brady selection,
they got lucky with Brady, though, Gary. They got what if the Patriots knew that Brady was going to be Brady? Why would they wait until the sixth round?
I just think that it's just again they pick guys that fit a certain attitude. So the next man up was obviously their mantra before it became kind of cliche. So,
but who else belongs in that category? Look, we talked about this during the draft last year.
Talk
Patriots really haven't drafted that well when you think about it, right? Mm-hmm. In recent years, especially.
Yeah, and I'm going outside of the draft. I just think day in and day out, whatever their evaluation, when they go, they're just pulling people from positions. I can't think of the young man right now who's replaced Edelman. You know, they just find these guys year after year, season after season. We all have injuries. I just think a lot of the credit goes to that ability to keep surfacing these guys up to keep them competitive. So that's just my take.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the better teams in the league, number one, they first of all, they have their own philosophies. But I think the better teams, they draft somewhat well. They get certain players. They get lucky on players. Let's be honest. Drafting well is like, yeah, I've been lucky. I have an eye for talent, but these players actually panned out. Who knows? I mean, this kid can look amazing in college, but he might not pan out. So the draft is you really get lucky, especially with a guy like Brady. But I think the Patriots, what they do more than any other team is plug and play and pulling guys from around the league, pulling guys off the streets, guys who teams might not want, guys who – you know, have played a couple of years in this league where they understand the league. They get it. It's not too fast for them. They're still young. They get them where they get certain guys where we can pay this guy this type of money. He's not a big-time free agent. We can pay him this type of money. He can come into this system and fit well into the system. He's going to work hard. He's going to do what we're asking him to do. He's going to fit into this puzzle that we have here.
Aren't we talking about coaching then?
We are talking about coaching.
If that's the way it operates, you're talking about a coach that knows who will help his system and plugs guys into that system. I think. I'm not saying that's the biggest reason. I think Brady's the biggest reason, but I wouldn't undervalue coaching. Recent Patriots first-rounders, and I have the list in front of me here. They haven't had a first-rounder in the last 2 years. Malcolm Brown, starter on their defensive line, first-round pick, 32nd overall in 2015. Dominic Easley, first-round pick in 14, no longer with them.
Mm-hmm.
Dont'a Hightower, injured. Chandler Jones, no longer with him. Nate Solder, he's there, starting left tackle. Devin McCourty, he's there, starting at safety. Gerard Mayo, not with him. Brandon Merriweather, not with him. Lawrence Maroney, not with him. Logan Mankins, gone. Benjamin Watson, now we got old guys. I mean, Richard Seymour was a great player for a while for him. Vince Wilfork mm-hmm. was a great player. Andy Katzenmoyer, is that a great first-round pick? I don't think it's the draft. Now, the caller said it was not just the draft, and I agree with that, but I don't think it's just the draft. I don't think it is the draft, as a matter of fact. I think they do well in spite of their drafting sometimes.
Yeah, that's because they have who they have.
They have Brady.
Exactly.
And a good coaching staff, not just Belichick, but a good coaching staff.
They do have a good staff. Those guys all understand the system. But for me, it's always going to – they have Brady. That's what it is. Brady plays – he understands the system. I had a guy tweet me, is Brady a system quarterback? What Brady does well, he understands that system as well, or if not better, than Josh McDaniels. He understands everything that they're trying to get done. And so because of that, it allows him to just focus. He's been running the same system forever.
He's a system quarterback. The system is him. Right? He is the system.
Right.
We do things on offense because we have Tom Brady. That's
right.
Their system.
But and people who will say, well, you know, Tom Brady's a system quarterback, all of that stuff. You watch the throws that the dude makes. He puts the ball where he wants to put the ball. If he wants to put it low on the goal line, it's going to be low. If he wants to put it high on the back line, it's going to be high. If he wants to lead a guy a certain way, he's going to do that. You watch him at the line of scrimmage. Watch him diagnose a defense, actually tell you so-and-so, this person is the mic, 50's the mic, he's blitzing. Watch the receiver run hot right there.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens every game.
Yeah.
He is the one that makes that thing go because he understands everything about that system, and all he has to do is focus on what the defense is doing.
We're going to break. We're going to come back, of course. Andrew Brandt talking about the business of football when we return. Maybe we'll get into some Patriots with him. And we'll talk with Bills corner Sharice Wright when they come up to practice field, probably 20, 25 minutes away. So that's all coming up next hour. Come on back. The John Murphy Show presented by NEPA from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Update from One Bills Drive. Practice has just ended for the Buffalo Bills. Their Thursday practice with a big game coming up Sunday against New England. The Bills keeping an eye on a couple of key contributors going into this game. Cornerback E.J. Gaines did not practice yesterday with a knee injury, but apparently got in some individual work today during the media viewing portion of practice. Bills are 7-3 when Gaines is in the starting lineup. Wide receiver Calvin Benjamin, who spent yesterday on the sidelines with his injured knee, got in some work today. Kyle Williams, Nick O'Leary, missing practice yesterday. Both on the field today. We expect a practice update soon from head coach Sean McDermott. Bills have won three of their last four. They need to keep winning to bolster their shot at a playoff berth. Patriots have already clinched the AFC East, their ninth straight, and they're in the hunt for a home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs. Bills-Patriots Sunday. The weather forecast calls for partly cloudy skies, high of 40 degrees on game day in Foxborough. Craig Rolstead is the referee. Kickoff 1 o'clock at Gillette Stadium. Our network pregame coverage begins at 11 a.m. New York Giants have announced that Dave Gettleman interviewed for their vacancy at the general manager position today. Sitting down with team president John Mara and a couple of others, Gettleman has deep roots with the Giants. He spent 15 years there with the Giants as a personnel executive. Before that, he was here with the Buffalo Bills. He went on to be GM of the Panthers, serving there for four seasons, helping to guide them to the Super Bowl in 2015. Ezekiel Elliott back on the field for the Cowboys, but he's not talking much about what he did during his time off. Served a six-game suspension for violating the personal conduct policy. Ezekiel says he's not going to talk about it when he was asked what he did during those 6 weeks. Buffalo Sabres getting set for a busy weekend, a home game against the Flyers coming up tomorrow night, and then on the road in Carolina coming up on Saturday. They'll be back on the ice today for practice. Coach Phil Housley making some adjustments to the line combinations as they get set to host Philadelphia tomorrow night. And the National Women's Hockey League broke new ground today. The Buffalo Buttes of the NWHL has been purchased by Pagula Sports and Entertainment. They'll play their home games at the Harbor Center downtown. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones with our show coming to you from the Ad Pro Sports Training Center. Practice has just ended. We'd like to take a step back every couple of weeks and take a look at the business side of the NFL, and there's no better guest to do that with us than our next one. Andrew Brandt is a columnist for mmqb.si.com, who covers the business side of the NFL, host of the Business of Sports podcast, and director of the Morehead Center at Villanova Law School, writes for The Athletic as well. Andrew is on the line with us. Andrew, John Murphy and Donald Jones here. Happy holidays. Thanks for joining us here today.
John and Donald, always good to be with you guys. Always a busy time in the business of the NFL, maybe one of the busiest weeks ever with a franchise sale that we never dreamed of at this time last week.
Came out of nowhere, and it seems to be moving extremely quickly, the Carolina Panthers transfer. Tell us what you know about that, Andrew, and I don't want to get into sordid details here, but for that to move that quickly means that there's much more than smoke around that fire around Jerry Richardson, right?
Yeah, and without getting into the details, there was a report in Sports Illustrated, and I know and trust the reporter John Wertheim, the executive editor there, very well, and over a period of a long time uncovered a lot of things, mainly confidential settlements and some disturbing behavior by the Carolina Panthers owner. And somehow, obviously, the team became aware of this. They were snooping around, asking a lot of questions, and I think it was Friday night there was some release that there was an investigation into the owner for workplace misconduct. Then we get to Sunday noon, right before the games, and the report was released by Sports Illustrated. And you know what? By dinner time, he's selling the team.
Yeah.
So this was a stunning rapidity of events. And beyond everything that we hear about with franchise sales, I've never seen anything like this that has moved from we didn't know about anything on Friday to he's selling the team on Sunday. So, as you mentioned, there's a lot of smoke or fire behind the smoke, and he realizes that as we go forward.
Hey, Andrew, with that smoke and now him selling the team, have you heard anyone who might be a candidate for buying this team? Have you heard any rumors?
I haven't. I mean, he was very clear that this process doesn't begin until after the season, which the Panthers hope is into January or even February. So we'll see. But I do think it's going to get a big number. I mean, I think it's going to take a while. I think, you know, conservatively, we're talking probably, in my mind, at the start of the 2018 season, you know, investment bankers are going to get involved and lawyers and everything else. But there's enough billionaires out there that want an NFL team. And I think they'll find the number they want, which probably will start with a two in terms of billions.
I'm interested in the investigation in this sense, Andrew. Who does that investigation? Who launches that investigation into the owners? I've never heard anything like that going on in the league before.
Well, it's interesting because as of Friday and Saturday, I believe the investigation was a law firm in Carolina that, ironically, of course, maybe not of course, but for those cynics among us, had a lead partner who was a part owner of the Panthers. Well, by Sunday night, or I guess Monday morning, it looks like the NFL's taken that over. Hmm. So they're going to get into this conduct, which raises all kinds of questions that I'm thinking about, which is, what about precedent? I'm a lawyer. I always think about precedent. There are going to be skeletons in the closets of these other 30 owners. We know that. I mean, it's just human nature that confidential settlements, statements that were racist, statements that were sexist, we're going to have that. Now, whatever they do with Richardson, they're going to have to set a precedent here. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting how they handle this because Richardson has already waved the white flag and said, I'm selling, but I think it's a good thing they're still going to investigate because, you know, you've got to set a role model for conduct.
I saw somewhere, Andrew, where the mayor came out and said they would want to keep the team there. Do you think that's a possibility where they could actually move that team if it's sold to someone or once it's sold to someone?
Yeah, Donald, I've been asked about that a lot. And whether it is a possibility or not, here's my question. Where?
Right.
I mean, you're not going back to St. Louis. You're not going back to Oakland. You're not going back to San Diego. I just don't think anyone's going back there. So tell me where. I mean, you guys know better than I do about Toronto as a viable market. I don't know, but it just seems like people are going to ask about moving, but my question is, where are they going to move? Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's realistic.
Andrew, what have you heard about the internal politics of the NFL ownership group, you know, the other owners? I assume Jerry Richardson was somewhat popular. I mean, he seemed to wield a lot of power within that group. And the fact that they've been taken right out of the equation, I wonder how that sits with them or how they're reacting to kind of the stunning turn of events down there in Charlotte.
Yeah, it's interesting. We haven't seen a lot of people speaking in support of Jerry. The other Jerry did a bit, Jerry Jones, but listen, I can tell you my experiences 10 years with the Packers, seeing Jerry Richardson, he was kind of this presence in meetings, the only owner that played kind of a sort of a stately presence, if you will, old Southern gentleman, but, you know, not knowing all the things that have just came out. He was also, and this is the business of football, he was also maybe the most hawkish owner in terms of players. They should be, you know, make less, keep them down, keep the union down. So I think the union will probably welcome a new owner in that position.
Hmm. With Andrew Brandt, the columnist for MMQB.SI.com, who covers the business of the NFL, I want to switch a little bit to, well, the Bills play the Patriots this coming Sunday, Andrew, and this story got our attention this week about Tom Brady's personal trainer, a gentleman named Guerrero, and how he's been outlawed from dealing with the rest of the team there in Foxborough.
Yeah.
We all know Bill Belichick likes to maintain control, but this one kind of came out of nowhere, and I wonder what precipitated that announcement from the Patriots this week.
Yeah, a lot of memories from park back with me. I won't name names, but in my time with the Packers, this is something teams deal with a lot, not as high profile, obviously. And when I say something, I mean guys having, well, for lack of a better word, gurus.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be personal, mental, it could be massage, it could be chiropractic, it could be acupuncture, it could be strength training, conditioning, sports psychology. Tom Brady had this guy, all that wrapped into one guy, and obviously he had some roam, he had some access, he had some juice, and the Patriots seemed to be taking that away. I dealt with it all the time because you have conflicts with the guru's way of doing things about the player and the team's way. And team training staffs are very territorial. And they have a right to be. We're paying millions of dollars to these guys. They do what we say, not what some outsider says. But on the other hand, a player's body and mind is his own. And he may like the way his guy does it better than the team's guy. So to me, it kind of brings out a conflict that's going on all around sports right now, especially with stars who can afford this. I mean, you read about LeBron James. He's got like five guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I wonder what the Cavaliers think of that. So it's just, you know, it's something to watch out for, and I think the Patriots are putting their foot down, saying enough. And maybe, I've read some report, maybe he was recruiting other players, which didn't sit well.
You know, Donald and I were close with Lorenzo Alexander, Bill's linebacker, who openly and freely and pretty actively, you know, what's he got? He's like six different people.
Yeah,
he deals with massage people and
Pilates
people.
I know from being a player. You have a bunch of different people that you deal with. I've never known a player personally that actually had a guy who had access to the building, though. Usually
right.
This is an off-season thing where
right.
you go off and you do your own thing in the off-season. Not during the season where the guy has an office in the building and now you separate and say, no, you can only deal with Tom Brady. You can't deal with anybody else on the team.
Yeah. Andrew,
right. Or those people can come to you wherever you are.
Right, right.
Because I think that even beyond the off-season and in-season, I have dealt with players that get a regimen
mm-hmm.
from their off-season guy and they like it better than their in-season team guy.
Yeah, that's
and
a lot
that's
of players.
What happens, you know, you get some conflict there.
Yeah. In our eternal quest in Buffalo to look for the end of the Patriots dynasty, could this signal a rift between Belichick and Brady that might be serious moving forward, Andrew?
Well, I think rift is too strong a word, but I think this is the tension I talk about, and it even extends to the stars because I think they've laid down the gauntlet on what the access is. And Brady may not feel great about it, but you know, you wonder, as we just speculated, what happened, because it seemed like he had this access for, I don't know, years, and maybe something happened, and, you know, maybe that little tidbit I saw about recruiting other players
right.
got in
yeah.
the way of things.
Hey, Andrew, since we're talking about Brady, we were just talking about this during the break. You feel like the Patriots now, as you look at Jimmy Garoppolo and what he's doing out in on the West Coast in San Fran, you feel like the Patriots might have moved too fast and letting him go?
You know, it's interesting because Patriots are always supposedly the smartest guys in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had two trades of quarterbacks that look better for the other teams right now. Mm-hmm. One is Brissett. I know the Colts haven't done well on the record, but Brissett's looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a receiver, Dorsett, I don't think has done much for the Patriots. And now, of course, Garoppolo. Listen, I think they got what they could. The guy wasn't going to play. They would have to either franchise him or let him go. I don't think they were going to franchise him to make more than Tom Brady. So they got what they could. I don't know if they could have gotten more, maybe from Cleveland, and maybe wouldn't go to Cleveland. I don't know. But Garoppolo looks good. The thing about Garoppolo, not related to the Patriots, is I don't understand why the 49ers didn't sign him when they traded for him.
Yeah.
Because now it's all the leverage is in his hands. His contract's up in two games.
Hmm.
And I know they can franchise him, but that's not a way you want to go.
Andrew Brandt joins us. He covers the business of the NFL for the MMQB. Hey, since we last talked to you, Andrew, we talked to you, I think, right about the time when owners were getting set to meet. They subsequently voted and extended Roger Goodell's contract. And that contract, his agenda is pretty full, maybe not today, but soon. He'll have to deal with a new CBA during his term, right, and new television
right.
agreements, wherever those television agreements go and whatever platform they decide on.
Yeah, the thing we don't know, John, is what influence did Jerry Jones have? We know he backed off from a lot of things, and as I said, he was never trying to replace Goodell. It was all about the contract, but it does, you know, seem like the contract has a lot of incentives, probably for the things we're talking about, like CBA and media deals and revenues. And maybe Jones did get his way. Maybe Jones got his pound of flesh with the contract negotiations. The other thing that's come out is there's going to be more owner oversight. And this is kind of what Jones wanted. He, instead of the guy they hire and pay telling them what to do, he wanted to make sure Goodell knows they're telling him what to do.
Mm.
So we may see a shift in power, just sort of a more owner oversight and Goodell won't get to stack the committee with Arthur Blank and others like he did before.
Do you think, I mean, is this like a legacy move coming forward here for Roger Goodell, getting these deals done and you know, maybe burnishing his reputation, not that he needs to, but, you know, getting himself lined up for the Hall of Fame? What is he looking to do, and how will he be judged at the end of his tenure?
Yeah, it's a great question, and we'll see if this is the end of it. 2024 would make it 17 years, maybe 18 years. I think he came in 2006, which is a long run. And, yeah, he's already – I mean, he's had one really positive CBA for the owners. Maybe he gets another. Maybe he gets – these media deals as a challenge with ratings declining, but then he's got Google and Yahoo and all the others. And I think the total revenues thing is going to be a big calling for him. But beyond all that, guys, I think we'll look back on in 50 years and say, yeah, Goodell, that was the conduct commissioner.
Yeah.
And Ray Rice and Ezekiel Elliott and Adrian Peterson and Tom Brady, all these high-profile names that were under his thumb.
Andrew, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, your time in Green Bay and what Aaron Rodgers, I mean, obviously we know what he means to that team, but now they've placed him on IR. We saw him come back. Have you had a chance to talk to him throughout the course of all of this?
Through text, I have. I mean, listen, you're getting personal here because me and my boys sat in that bar the other day and watched. Oh, it was sad because, you know, the Packers, of course, got the onside kick.
Yeah.
The storybook was alive. We're going to get Aaron in the playoffs. He's going to win. But, yeah, the dream ended. I just think, you know, the medical staff at the Packers, I've said for years, extremely conservative. I really wondered if they were going to put him back, and my information was he was fine to go back. Was he 100% healed? No. Was he healed enough to play? Yes. So now he goes back to full healing in meaningless games. I get that. It's just a unique situation with the Packers where they had a chance. He was healed enough to play. He wasn't healed enough 100%. And that's that fine line you go through. And it's a weird feeling in Green Bay and Packer Nation because they're so used to the playoffs. I was there 10 years. I only missed the playoffs once.
Wow.
So you see that happening again now.
And one more issue I want to bring up with you, Andrew, before we let you go. And that is, you know, we had the Thomas Davis two-game suspension, subsequently reduced to one game. Here in Buffalo, and maybe around the league, there was a much made of the counterpoint between that suspension and the Rob Gronkowski one-game suspension.
Yeah.
And I get the sense that we're at a spot here, and these are on-field issues we're talking about, at least I'm talking about. Folks really aren't sure what to expect from the league when it comes to, you know, discipline for on-field activities. What do you think of that?
Yeah, and I wrote about this. I just think that, you know, there's got to be more transparency. The thing we heard about Thomas Davis was a repeat offender. Okay, that's some criteria, but we don't hear any other criteria. And I, you know, I'm like you on Gronk. I just, that was a premeditated run and slam. All the other ones, as heinous as they look, they're in the heat of battle. They're bang-bang plays like Davis on Devontae Adams. I don't get it with Gronk. I think it sets up a bad look for the NFL where you have the bang-bang plays of Juju Schuster and all these other ones getting the same as Gronk. The chain snatching was two games. Thomas Davis was two games versus a premeditated slam. That's one they have to answer better than they have. And we talk about commissioner power. Well, these are just jointly appointed former players like Derek Brooks and John Runyon. And it seems like we need more out of that to feel better about it.
I agree. Andrew, thanks for this. Have a great holiday. We hope to talk to you again soon. Thank you.
Oh, it was a pleasure, guys. Happy holidays.
Andrew Brandt is a columnist for the mmqb.si.com and now a writer for the new website, The Atlantic. He joins us occasionally to talk about the business of the NFL, and he joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Donald and I coming back in a moment. We're going to talk with Sherrice Wright, Bill's cornerback, getting set for the game against the Patriots. Sherrice Wright coming up next. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and we're joined in studio just off the practice field by Bills cornerback Sharice Wright. Sharice, thanks for coming by. Happy holidays. Yeah, How are you feeling?
Thank you. Feeling good.
You got a lot of playing time in recent weeks, especially with the injury to E.J. Gaines, and you've had to learn to be versatile, right? A little inside, a little outside.
Right. 1 week is nickel, the next week is corner, but our corners travel in this defense, what helps a lot. You know, kind of, so we all kind of play nickel in a sense. It's not as much, you know, when they want to go in a slot when we're in, like, base personnel, we'll have to come over, so.
How much have you guys changed since the beginning of the year? I remember coming into the season, it was like, okay, this is going to be a zone team. They play mostly zone, but it seems like now you guys are mixing a lot of man in there. Like you said, the corners are traveling, different things.
Yeah, I mean, you can't stay the same in this league. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're going against certain offenses, sometimes it's best to play zone. Sometimes it's best to bring pressure, not bring pressure. It's all based off the game plan, and mm-hmm. Coach Frazier does a good job with that every week. So
I watched most of the Patriots-Steelers game over again last night, and the Steelers played more man than I think I've seen in a long time against anybody, but especially against New England.
You can't. It's hard to play zone against
New England?
Against Brady. Yeah, he will carve that up. They just sit and find those holes, and he's boom. Yeah. It's just like throwing catch right there.
Is that what
you
see?
I mean, if you have zone, you got to bring some type of pressure behind it. You can't let them sit back there. But even in man, you know, trying to guard Grunt one-on-one, find somebody that's that big that can get around his big body, a guy like that. And like you said, when he has time in the pocket, it's hard. The best thing you can do is just play discipline. That's the best thing you can do against those guys is don't make mistakes and don't beat yourself.
Yeah, a caller earlier in the show who suggested that there's no way you can put a corner on Gronkowski. I think there is once in a while, right?
I mean, depends on who that corner is.
Right.
If that corner is big enough to – I mean, our safeties are just as big as corners. Most safeties in the league nowadays are just as big as corners. You just got to be able to move. I mean, but he's too fast for linebackers in a sense, and, you know, he's a little bit too big for corners, like you said. So
that's so crazy to me. I mean, I was in New England and trained with them, been on the field with them. But when I watch him go against these defenses, he just seems so – he looks so slow to me. But it's like he gets open, you know. And then when he'll catch it and he takes off, it's like nobody's catching him. This dude is slow as dirt.
He doesn't look fast at all on film, man, and it could be deceiving. Maybe because he's so big. He's just a big-bodied guy, so he doesn't look like he's moving fast. And his catch radius is a lot, you know, bigger than a lot of other people. His mm-hmm. quarterback, you know, he has one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's going to put it in the right spot.
I mean, the thing I always think about with watching Gronkowski is almost like basketball. He's like one of those low post guys who just uses his body to shield and gives you a target, you know, gives you one hand to throw a pass to or something, and you can't get to it because he's so wide, you know,
wide
up top.
Right.
It's kind of like a basketball player.
Yeah. It's kind of what it is.
Yeah.
Well, you know, since you brought up basketball, let's talk about a little dribbling that you do. As you caught the interception last week, started to return it, and decided you wanted to play and-one basketball, dribble it to yourself a little bit.
That was a dribble, right?
It was a bounce to myself kind of, you know, pass, I guess. I don't know what that was, but I got to hold on to that ball.
I thought you were taking it to the house, and then I'm like, oh, we fumbled!
Yeah, I thought it was, too. I think we all
did. You got a little too excited.
Yeah,
huh?
I did. Micah kind of, it's in my left hand. I got to get that ball in my strong hand, but.
Did your own teammate hit it out? Or
yeah, Micah kind of hit it out, but I got to hold on to it.
You tell Micah.
I just hope they gave him.
Why are you hating on me, Micah?
Like, hey, I hope they gave him a forced fumble.
Yeah. They give him a forced fumble?
Yeah, hopefully they did. Right here you see his arm.
He almost reached back and got it.
Yeah, he reached back.
It was the Dolphins game was, I mean, Cutler was putting it up there for you, and all three of you guys almost, not saying easy interceptions, but all three of them were like gift wrapped to you, right?
Yeah. You got to catch the ones they throw to you.
Yeah, that's right.
They don't come often, and when they do, you want to make sure you take advantage of it, mm-hmm. and, you know, I think we did that.
Did you go into that game last Sunday thinking there's a chance that Cutler's going to put it up here?
Personally, I didn't think I was going to be playing that much, but that's just the way it works. And but we knew. I mean, that's his history. If you know Jay Cutler and you've been watching him, I mean, he has a whole lot of turnover, whether fumbling the ball in the pocket or sack fumbles or interceptions. So we knew the opportunity would be there if we just brought pressure up front. And, you know, we knew he'll get the chance. He's going to throw us one or two, and we just had to catch the ball. That was just the bottom line.
When a quarterback throws a pass like that, like the one he threw to you or like the one he threw to Tre'Davious, where he basically threw a punt to Tre'Davious where he just had to catch it like that. In your mind, after you dribbled the ball to yourself, do you say to yourself, did he really just throw that? Like, where was he looking?
It was actually what I said to myself when I seen the ball coming. I'm like, oh, he really just threw it. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And then it was, let's catch it and run with it. Mm-hmm. So.
That game against the Dolphins, you know, the analytics website, Pro Football Focus, had you as having the best game among any Bills defensive back. I think three targets your way and no completions. Did you feel like that was one of your best games since you've been here?
Yeah, it was. I mean, coming in the midst of the game and just the timing of it, I got a turnover, and I didn't give up any catches. And so, I mean, if I could say one of my best games.
It's been an interesting season for you in that you've been in and out of the lineup a couple of times, inactive a couple. What are you smiling about?
Yeah, it's just
it's more than interesting.
It's been
to you,
one of those years, yeah, man.
Is it frustrating when you're scratched, and that's happened when EJ was ready? Is that frustrating for you when that happened?
I mean, as a competitor, yes, but you know, as a team player, and you know, and just me just playing my role and just respecting what my role is on this team and just doing what I'm asked to do to kind of help this team win. At this point, that's what I'm here to do. I'm here to win football games. And, you know, if I can help in any type of way, whether coming out and practice and practicing hard and getting guys ready to go, or, you know, when my number is called, just being ready no matter what.
There were, I think, three straight games where you were inactive, right?
Yeah, three.
How do they
– like, don't bring it back up.
Well,
don't bring
all
it
right,
back
one
up.
More question about this.
How do they tell you?
How do they tell you? How do they break that news? Mm-hmm. Is it Friday? Is it Saturday? What?
Yeah, it's typically Friday. They kind of – I'm a veteran in this game, and I've seen it a lot of times. So you kind of can tell.
Yeah.
The first time it caught me by surprise, it was a San Diego game. To be honest with you, I had like 40-something tickets.
Ah.
And had to find out that I wasn't even going to be active.
That's awful.
It was like on a Friday or Saturday. So.
Yeah.
That one was probably the one that kind of hurt the most for me. Just going back playing against the Chargers in LA and having my family there and all that. But. And I didn't really know. It was kind of like, you know, am I going to be inactive? It came Friday. I wasn't on no special teams. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
I remember watching them tell a guy on Sunday morning, like, you're going to be down for this game. And he was like, what?
Hey,
we're about to be on the field in like 3 hours.
I've probably been part of that, walking in on Sunday and not expecting to be down and you're down and not expecting to be up and you're up. You know, like, oh, man, I didn't have any reps this week, but I'm up. Kind of one of those situations on Sunday. Well, I was surprised to be up, to be honest with you. We thought, you know, EJ was back. It was kind of going to be the same rotation. Didn't really get that many practice reps Friday. Wasn't on special teams too much. Right. And then, you know, but thank God I stayed ready. I stayed in my books and stayed ready.
You think that was because of what the Dolphins do? They like to go four wide. You know, you don't have too many teams that will go four wide, but you need extra corners up when you have a team that's going four wide.
Yeah, definitely. And just, I mean, in the secondary, you just never really know. I mean, from sprinting and stopping and tackling, you know, and it's one of those positions where you never really know, you know, when the chances of guys going down.
Yeah.
And, you know, we would hate to
not
have enough corners. And I said, they do a good job. And like I said, it was one of those – the past 2 weeks it worked out. EJ and Tre'Davious played the whole game. Leonard played the whole game. Other than him not playing nickel. But, I mean, they do a good job kind of figuring it out. And it takes them time to kind of, you know, figure it out. And I just got to be patient and understand, you know what I mean, what the process is for them to decide who's going to be active, who's not. And that's their job. And they do a good job at it. And luckily, I was active. And, you know, EJ going down in the game and, you know, me being ready.
And oftentimes that process is not just about your group. It's about we need this number of years. The number's got to come from somewhere. You did not play in the first New England game 3 weeks ago. Obviously, you've looked at the video. What can the Bills take from that game that would apply to this Sunday's game?
Oh, man. Like, I mean, just looking at the stats, like the first half of the game is for us is just finishing. I mean, you look at their numbers the first half and their numbers the second half as far as passing yards and what they were able to do against us, it made the difference. And if we play a tight first half, second half like we did the first half, it's a whole different game. So we just want to focus on finishing the whole game every quarter against those guys because, you know, that's what it takes to beat a team like that. We've seen the Pittsburgh game. You know, it goes down to the wire. You got to be able to finish at the end of the game.
I'm not sure how many times you've actually lined up against the Patriots, but they're notorious for making changes at halftime and what they're doing and their approach to the game. How big of a change do they really make? Is it something totally different that you have never even seen from them?
Not too much. They do what they do. I mean, they might pick and choose a couple things, or they might have seen a play that didn't work for them in the first half. They'll go back to that play kind of at the right time. Mm-hmm. But they don't do too many different things. You know, they have their go-to plays. But like you said, he might have missed a throw on third down and got sacked, and it's like he's not going to mess up too many times back there in that pocket. But they said we got to just keep bringing the pressure and keep, you know, put the pressure on them, not on us.
Mm-hmm. Sharice, it's the Patriots. They're defending, Super Bowl champs. They won the division again this year. Among some elements of the fan base, I think it's like, well, here we go, Patriots, chalk it up as an L. In your locker room, though, I'm sure it's a much different feeling. Like, maybe even like, yeah, let's see what we can do against Tom Brady and Gronkowski and all those.
Yeah, I mean, we're up for the challenge. I mean, Coach McDermott does a good job just keeping us no matter what. I mean, we are who we are. They put their shoes on just like us. They put their uniform on just – they're human just like us. I mean, you've seen what the Dolphins did to them, mm-hmm. you know, and, yeah. when they didn't have Gronkowski. But, you know, they were able to beat them, and we were able to beat the Dolphins. And any given Sunday in the NFL, man, anybody can lose that day. So just knowing that and knowing who we are as a team and how confident we are, we got to go in with confidence. So,
you know, we talk so much about Gronk, but they also brought over Brandon Cooks, and he was supposed to be a difference maker. He hasn't been that much of a difference maker, but you see him make some big-time plays. What do you see out of him and how they use him?
Yeah, I mean, him just with the speed, being able to go up top, you know, and stretch the field vertically, you know, to get the corner out of there and run Gronkowski on the underneath route, you know, in certain zone coverages. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. you got to respect his speed. And like you say, he's a good player, and you got to respect him. And he comes through when his number's called, put it that way. Yeah. Yeah.
Sharice, I've been told that one of your teammates recently took a shot at you when asked the question, so I'm going to give you a chance. Is which one of your teammates would you least like your sister to date, to go out with?
Preston Brown.
Really?
Yes.
Why
that
is
was
that?
Quick response.
Yeah, you didn't even think about it.
probably not one, because his name is Preston. Two, because he's not a fan of USC. And three, he said me when he was asked that question. So
payback.
Got to give it back to him.
So he said he wouldn't want you to date his sister.
Yeah, that's crazy. I'm probably the best man for her.
Tell him you're resourceful, man. You took an Uber from Chicago to Buffalo.
I find a way to make it happen.
Yeah,
man.
I make it happen, man. I make it happen for your sister.
He's the type of guy you want in your family, man.
Sharice, thanks for this. Good luck to you Sunday. Thanks for coming by. Sharice Wright, Bill's Corner, joining us in studio after practice today. Donald and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive in our One Buffalo studio. Practice has ended. Trying to get some intel, some info on who's in, who's out. And as soon as we get that, we'll let you know who practiced today is what I'm trying to say. Our Twitter poll today, pretty basic, but, you know, you stand here, you look at the rematch with the Patriots. Bills lost the first game this year to the Patriots, and you look ahead and maybe what's gone behind us with the Patriots with 9 consecutive AFC East Division titles. Our Twitter poll, what is the biggest reason the Patriots have been so dominant in the AFC East? Right now on Twitter, 54% of you say it's Brady. 21% of you say it's Belichick. 21% of you say it's the ineptitude of the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets. 4% of you say it's something else. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Joe calling from Buffalo with some thoughts on this. Joe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Great show today.
Thank you.
I chose other as to the reason, and let me explain why. But first, obviously, both Brady and Belichick are huge differentiators for their team. So, you know, obviously, I don't know for sure. But I didn't choose Brady because the Pats are – so if we look back to when he started playing in basically in 2001 in his second year, they're about 77 or 78% winning percentage. Without Brady, they're 70%. So they still do pretty well without Brady. Now, there's no record of how they would have done in the playoffs without him. So, you know, that's kind of why I didn't pick Brady. I didn't choose Belichick because without Brady, lifetime, he's 52-60. So if you look back time in Cleveland and before Brady took over the starting role, it doesn't look so good for him. But the reason I picked other, and I'm guessing I'll get a lot of people rolling their eyes at this, but I really think Ernie Adams and overall analytics strategy in New England is really the biggest reason for their long-term success. I mean, he took over as director of football research in 2000, and from that time on, and Belichick's really unwavering belief in it and making decisions that would go against his gut instinct, I really think that they use it better than anybody else in the league. You just had somebody on from MMQB, and I read an article back in June where they said they're by far they have the most dedication to analytics, and it's kind of laced throughout the organization. And the thing that bothered me the most about that article is where they put the Bills on that. So we have, I think, two guys in our analytics department, and they spend most of their time focused on non-football related stuff and analytics. So in my opinion, that's been the one steadfast thing that really makes a difference with that team.
What do you see? What tangible use of analytics do you see from the Patriots?
Well, I mean, the most obvious one probably is play calling. I mean, I think it was 5-6 years ago when they went for it on fourth down and their own 30.
Against the Colts?
Something like that.
Yeah.
They lost the game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that shows that they do believe in it. But it seems like, I think when they show, like, sideline, the coach down the sideline, they start talking about, it seems like they know our plays before we call the play. So that's all about analytics. How they... their players and players who know how to work within systems that are based on, you know, predicting the other team's tendencies and what the other team formation is going to be and how they're going to react to certain tendencies on the offense. I mean, they have a lot of that stuff figured out, I think, better than any other team in the league. Now, how they choose players, you know, who knows? I don't know. Like you said, you were talking before about how they draft players. It doesn't seem to work that well for them there. So, but yeah, Ernie Adams, and I really wish the Bills would take more of a serious look at it and not just treat it as it's part of the equation, but we're on the sideline. We use our experience. You know, I really wish they would lean more heavily on analytics.
Well, okay, and you make some good points. I will say this. I think, Joe, the Bills and other teams, and I know the Bills best, I think they probably use analytics more than you think they do, and they're not interested in publicizing that. And in particular, I think I have noticed, and Donald, you can speak to this team, and I'm sure most teams use a lot, and by analytics is sort of a broad term, they use it to measure player performance, you know, and they use with the GPS system and, right. and all of the, you know, the monitors they put on players on a regular basis during practice. To me, that is something that the Bills use quite a bit. And so I wouldn't undersell the Bills' use of it. If again, analytics mean different things to different people. Some people think it means you never punt on fourth down. That's kind of rudimentary, I think. You know, you kind of – that's part of it, but not a big part of it, I don't think. But I think the Bills probably use more analytics, you know, research-based. You know, the part about predicting what your opponents do, they all do that. They crunch out numbers.
They crunch out crazy
numbers. Incredible,
numbers.
You know, printouts and analysis of exactly your tendencies down and distance, every situation.
Let me tell you something. If we – actually had access to the scouting reports that the players get, we'd be able to tell the fans so much stuff about the Patriots, your head would spin. You'd be like, yo, what? What? I didn't know they did that on first down. I didn't know they did this in whatever personnel. I mean, they have so many different numbers that they crunch out and they only give it to their players, and they're using analytics for all of that stuff. For me, it's still, look, analytics, that's one part of it. But any true coach, a true real football coach will tell you, you still have to be able to have an eye for talent. You still got to make plays on the field, and you still have to go off of the feeling, the temperature of your team. There's a lot that goes into this stuff. You know, Coach McDermott might make a certain decision on the sideline based on all of it, based on analytics, if it's fourth down and whatever, based on how his defense is playing, based on the weather. I mean, there's so many different things. You can't just lean on analytics, because analytics – it's not football.
Yeah.
You know, you have to lean on a lot of different things.
I know the Bills, and I'm certain most teams do this in terms of analytical research when it comes to drafting, and regardless of what you think of the Patriots draft performance, the Bills draft performance, they have parameters of success. Like, we know that a cornerback has to run this, or has to be this size, or have to have this length, or has to have this jumping ability, you know, measurables. And they plug those in, and if you're outside those parameters, you better have a good reason for drafting that guy.
Right.
The Bills do that. I'm sure most teams do that. To me, that's a really valuable use of analytics, you know, like how do you fit within the parameters of what a successful NFL cornerback in this system? I mean, they even pare it down to how we play, how we want our corners to be.
You know? And I think the better teams are the ones, because if you look at it, and now we're talking about the draft and sometimes even free agency and bringing certain players on your team, you got to put money into this because the Patriots are notorious for not really paying. This was a year that was kind of an anomaly for them where they paid a bunch of guys a lot of money. But they typically, this is what we pay to certain positions. And this is it. If you feel like I'm an outside linebacker and I need to make this much money because I produced this much last year, we don't view that position as a position that we pay that type of money. So you don't fit in here, you know. So there are so many different things. They use all of these teams. I think the Bills are the same way now. They use analytics for all of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, on the field, though, you got to go off of a lot of different things before you make decisions.
Does virtual – see, I don't know what people mean when they say analytics. I think that they – I don't know if they understand the breadth of it. Does virtual reality fit into analytics? If it does, the Bills use that pretty extensively. Nathan Peterman on our show before he got the start against the Chargers a month or so ago, talking about how he's been in the virtual reality system that they have here to look at defenses and to make decisions, you know, with the helmet on and what the defense will look like.
Yeah.
That's pretty, you remember pretty, last that's year, not just us. A lot of teams do that.
You remember last year when we when I got here, I remember Tyrod and Aaron Williams both having the camera on their helmet
mm-hmm.
so that guys could actually see what they were
what
seeing.
Do you see
and, yeah, what do
is
you
that
see
analytics?
Here?
I don't know.
I don't know if that's analytics.
I don't either.
I think that's more of just trying to get a look at what are you looking at?
Yeah.
Are your eyes in the right place? Because I can tell by looking at this camera that's strapped to the side of your helmet where you're looking. You're looking at that safety, you're looking at that safety. You know, it's not like your head is turned to the left, but you're looking to the right.
Right.
You know, so I think they use a lot of different things to be able to make certain decisions. And they use a lot of different things to teach, especially in the off season. Once you get into the season, yeah, there are analytics, there are numbers that are crunched that will help you in scouting reports. They will help your guys know this is what they like to do on first down, this is what they like to do on second down. This is how they like to play, you know, in their first 15 plays or something like that. I mean, there are numbers that they crunch for all of that stuff. Ultimately, you got to have an eye for the talent. You have to make the plays on the field. The coach has to take the temperature of the room. He has to understand there's so many different factors that go into making decisions on Sunday. It's much more than just analytics.
But it's a good call, Joe, and something to think about. We're going to break. We're going to come back, of course, for the third hour, and we're going to be joined by Reuben Brown, long perennial Pro Bowl guard for the Buffalo Bills and the Chicago Bears, makes his usual Thursday appearance with us, plus more of your phone calls. What's the biggest reason for the Patriots' dominance in the AFC East, 9 straight division titles? We'll talk about that in the third and final hour of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. The Bills wrapped up their practice about 45 minutes ago. They got the game coming up against New England on Sunday. Keeping an eye on a couple of key contributors, cornerback E.J. Gaines, who missed practice yesterday with his knee, got in some individual work today during the media viewing portion of practice. By the way, the Bills are 7-3 when E.J. Gaines is in the starting lineup. Wide receiver Calvin Benjamin, who spent yesterday on the sidelines with his injured knee, got in some work today as well. Kyle Williams, Nick O'Leary, both of them back on the practice field. We hope to get an official update on practice coming up a little bit later on today. Bills winners of 3 of their last 4. They need to keep winning to bolster their shot at a playoff berth. The Patriots have already clinched the AFC East, their 9th straight division title. Bills-Patriots Sunday with a forecast calling for partly cloudy skies and a high of 40 degrees on game day in Foxborough. Craig Rolstad is your referee. Kickoff 1 o'clock Sunday at Gillette Stadium. Our network pregame begins at 11 a.m. The New York Giants have announced that Dave Gettleman interviewed for their vacant general manager position yesterday, sitting down with team president John Mara and others. Gettleman spent 15 years with the Giants as a personnel executive after his stint with the Buffalo Bills. He went to the Panthers for a while, 4 seasons as GM there, and helped guide Carolina to the Super Bowl in 2015. The Giants not ready to make their announcement yet on who will be their next general manager. Ezekiel Elliott back on the practice field for the Cowboys, eligible to return, but he will not say what he did during his 6-game suspension for violation of the league's personal conduct policy. He was asked about it yesterday and said, I'm not going to talk about it. Buffalo Sabres practicing today. Coach Phil Housley making some adjustments to his line combinations, reuniting Sam Reinhart and Jack Eichel. They skated on the line with Evander Kane. Sabres home against Philadelphia tomorrow night, and then they travel to Carolina on Saturday. And the National Women's Hockey League, the Buffalo Buttes franchise here in Buffalo, has been purchased by Pegula Sports and Entertainment Group. They will be the first National Women's Hockey League team to be owned and operated by outside owners. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. It is Thursday. That means our buddy Reuben Brown is joining us in studio to talk about events around the NFL and the Buffalo Bills. Reuben
is also. I always love that sound. Yeah. One of my favorite rappers do that sound, and it just.
Who?
He passed away, Sean P.
Oh, okay.
He used to always do Sean P. And I love that. I just, it's something about that gritty sound that I love. I grew up around that, so. But yeah, Murph.
Good to have you.
It's the holiday.
You seem quite festive.
I got shopping done.
Me too.
Yeah, ready to eat and be merry.
You going to Virginia?
Yeah, I'm going to shoot down to Virginia for a couple of days, get some of that good country food and
ham.
Virginia ham.
Is there no ham like Virginia ham?
It's the real deal. Right. It's top ham on the market. if you go to Spain, people in Spain will talk about Virginia ham. So
they know ham in Spain.
Yes, they do. Yeah. So I have a little pound on my chest because my people know how to make it.
Yeah, how do y'all go out and catch the pig yourself?
No, usually we'll raise them.
Yeah.
Now, I'm the city slicker now, so I pay some cousins to raise the pig.
Oh, man, they're like, you ain't even like, you
yeah,
ain't from
you
here
ain't
no
the same
more,
no more.
You changed, like, Rube, you changed.
I said, yeah, I did that job so much, I'm paying you. I'm not doing it more.
Do they do ham in Virginia like in Spain? You know how in Spain, in a household, you'll put a ham like in the kitchen on a stick or a pole, and people just come in and cut off
shave it. Yeah. You know, I grew up with a smokehouse in the back of my house. My dad built it. I helped him build it, and we had tons of access to pigs. If we didn't grow them, someone else had them. And if you had a smokehouse, people would ask you to help you. Allow you to hang the ham in their smokehouse,
right,
and let it cure. So what it does is just sits up there out of the reach of pests and all of that stuff, and they smother it with salt and whatever you want on it, mainly salt. Salt. And they wrap them up and they hang them, and they can hang there for as long as you want. And when they're ready to come down, you know, the older people know better than I would, like, oh, it's ready, you know, because as a little kid, we would sneak in some people's smokehouses and chop off a piece of meat. And, you know, that's why probably my stomach, I can eat anything now, because I was eating raw pig.
Uncured
ham back in the day.
But when you get it and it's cured and it's ready to go, what do you do with it? You just leave it in the house? And
some people cook them. You know, they'll then further cook them. Some people, if it's cured properly, you can just start slicing it. But we don't really do that. That's a Spaniard thing. You know, over here, we just, you know, either it's ready, you slice it for the holiday or whatever, and then you wrap it back up and put it away.
So if you want the true honey-baked ham, they need to come to Roots.
You got
to
come down to Virginia. Yes, sir. Virginia.
You ever notice how we always wind up talking about food?
About food, right? When he comes on. He brought us those grapes that one.
Music. These are the things in your wheelhouse now.
Hey, that's me.
Out of sports now. It's all food and music.
Yeah.
And bikes.
That's
and
a retirement.
Bikes. I wish I knew more about bikes.
That's a retirement. Does
listen, we got time. We ain't got nothing but time because the season's winding down for all of us. So we'll be into the off-season activities soon enough.
Yeah,
and we could talk motorcycles, bikes,
ham.
Yeah, exercise.
Yeah,
you name it.
Yeah. Reuben is in studio with us. He's also here on Sunday nights with Mike Catalana on MSG. You can watch Bills Tonight, a recap of the game. He does it every week with Mike Catalana, 11:30s on MSG. I hope you have a good game to talk about. I have a feeling this is going to be an interesting and maybe a pretty competitive game on Sunday, Reuben.
I mean, this is one of the biggest games the Bills have had in such a long time.
Sure.
And anytime you're in that position, it's noteworthy. And there's plenty to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, and talking, I was hearing you guys on my way in, and you talked about analytics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Analytics, if I'm not mistaken, I went to college, and I took a class, and that class was called statistics.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that analytics?
I don't know what it is. I think people have different opinions of what analytics is.
People do, right?
It's the study. Analytics is study of, you know, numbers, basically stats, you know, things that have occurred, and you crunch all of those numbers to come up with a formula or a conclusion.
Yeah, right. Prediction.
Prediction, yeah. You know, so that's stats. You know, that's right. Statistics.
Right.
And it, sports is all statistics. That's what I had to learn when I was taking my stats class, is I was lost. The teacher was up there in front of me talking, and I needed it to graduate it. And I was just like, oh, man, I'm failing. I'm not going to graduate. And it only clicked for me when the teacher asked us to do a project, outside of class project, and it was pretty tough and intensive. So I was finding trouble with it. I went to him, and he paired me with another student. And while he was talking to us and pairing and choosing our project, he's like, you play football? I say, yeah. It's like, you live it. You don't see it. You can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
You know. And so that's when I said, oh, that's it, you know, stats and all the things that I know, all the numbers we break down. I heard you say, Donald, you know, the fans would be amazed at the information that we gather on the beginning of the week when you go in to play a team on all of their tendencies. That's statistics. That's analytics. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those things, all those numbers you break down, how many times this guy. I mean, and for a player particularly, like if you're facing a defensive tackle in my position, I was a guard, I'd see how many times he had his hand, his right hand down, his left hand down, his right hand down with his left foot back or his right foot back. How many times with his, you know.
Put a beat to that.
Yeah. I would do.
But they wouldn't tell you that, right? Like,
I would do something. I would do that. Yeah. I would add what they give me. They would tell me, hey, Warren Sapp is this type of guy, that type of guy. He does this. This is the formations. This is the front. This is the tendencies. And then I'll add in, okay, how many times does he do that? And how many times does it do it against a guy like Larry Allen or opposed to a guy that he thinks he can beat? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something you don't know. Yeah. That's you have to do that work. You got to break down those analytics, statistics for yourself.
Reuben Brown in studio with us. I got some numbers for you, Reuben. Our Twitter poll, trying to ask the Bills fans about this run of dominance by the New England Patriots. They just clinched their ninth consecutive AFC East Division title. We put it up on Twitter asking people to tell us why that is. You know, why do you think the Patriots have been so dominant in this division? We offered up a couple of suggestions, and on Twitter, 54% of the folks say it's Tom Brady's presence, 21% say it's Bill Belichick, 21% say it's the ineptitude of the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets, and 4% have something else in mind. What do you think? How have the Patriots been able to have a run like this?
I'm going to tell you what I said first. What you said. And I don't know if this goes into the ineptitude, but ultimately I think the rest of these teams haven't found a quarterback, a true franchise quarterback.
Yeah, and I think that's because I was talking to my brother today, and he is a coach at Marshall University.
Cornell.
Yes. He's gone from Virginia Tech to, I think, Norfolk State. Now he's at Marshall. He's still making the rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I were talking about the Patriots, and it was like, we grew up together. That's my brother. So I was like, I don't think everybody's playing football against them. I think they go in trying to think, well, we don't have a Tom Brady, so we can't win. Literally. I mean, they'll come up with new schemes and everything other than go out and play football against them and do, honestly, what they're doing.
What they do best.
they make them get people look silly, really. I mean, because it's really all matchups. You know, how many times can you catch those matchups and take advantage of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the Bills going in know that they can do them, but they just aren't capable of capitalizing on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whereas the Patriots have found a way, game in and game out, whether it's a play called by a coach or a play successfully run by offense or defense, they get it done,
mm-hmm.
You know. And what's happening, it's just guys playing football. And they got a better combination of all of those things. So to that poll, I would say it's the ineptitude of everyone else.
Yeah.
Look, the Dolphins just beat them. The Dolphins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Dolphins beat them and then lost to the Bills the next
year. Yeah, you know, so they can be beaten on a more consistent basis. But I don't think – you know, sometimes guys just fold and they counting on it. They're waiting for you to fold.
Here's what it is. And the Patriots always talk about, we don't want to make mistakes. We want the other teams to make mistakes and beat themselves.
Yeah.
So when you go into the game playing the Patriots, just think about it, Murph. You've been around here for a while now. You see how the team prepares. Mm-hmm. And you watch and you listen to people say, it's Patriots week. Mm-hmm. So it's like your mindset changes going into this game, and you're pressing so much that you make that mistake. And the Patriots don't. They're like, all right, it's another game.
Mm-hmm. I tell you, right on the lines.
We're not going to make that mistake.
Right on the lines of what you're saying, this, I always get frustrated with offensive coordinators. As soon as they see Brady score one touchdown, we got to start scoring. I run games out of the window. We got to spread them out. We got to hurry up and get down the field. No, run the ball. Did you watch Seattle when they had him on the ropes? Did you watch Atlanta when they had him on the ropes? Mm-hmm. Did you watch Miami down there beat the mess out of him and get to Brady and bump him around? Did you watch the Baltimore Ravens when they used to go up there and give them all that they could handle? Mm-hmm. And they were lucky to get out of those games with wins. And a lot of those wins that they've had, just because the other guys are folded. Mm-hmm. You know, Atlanta folded. Yeah. They gave them the game. Seattle gave them the game. Two Super Bowls, take them back. Right?
Yeah, you got a good point there. Let's take some phone calls while Reuben Brown is with us. Steve calling from Amherst. Go ahead, Steve. You're on the air.
I'm glad to talk to you guys. Thank you. And, Reuben, you go back to the Old Testament, the Book of Numbers. Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
You know your parents taught you the Bible well. Listen, my point is New England has been caught before for the deflate gate. They got caught for signal stealing. So who knows what they're doing or what they're up to. But like Reuben said, just play ball, beat them clean.
Yeah.
And that's basically my statement. But I didn't like one certain hit in the snowball that was on Peterman. I bet if that would have been Brady on the ground and the play was over, get hit in the head, there would have been a penalty.
Hmm. Yeah, penalties are so subjective. Yeah. You know, you can sway them and whatever. So it's hard to say when a ref's going to call a penalty or not, you know.
No, it's crazy because as Reuben is talking about, you talk about those two Super Bowls, Atlanta and Seattle. Just think about it.
Yeah.
The last year in that Super Bowl, Atlanta, all they had to do was run the clock out. Run the ball, run the clock out. You decide you want to throw it and – we all know the rest
is history.
No five
Super Bowls.
The Seattle game, you have Marshawn Lynch still in his prime.
Man.
Marshawn Lynch still beast mode Marshawn Lynch on the 1 yard line after you just had a crazy pass play that got tipped up in the air. He comes down with it. Now you're on like the 2 yard line or something like that. You decide to go away from Marshawn Lynch?
Yeah.
Like, who does that? You know,
I'll tell you who does
that.
Jim Harbaugh. He did it with Frank Gore when San Francisco was sitting there on the goal line ready to score, and they let. And if you watch that game, they had just ran over Ray Lewis and made him look bad. They gave Ray Lewis a going-away present.
Yeah.
I wish I was on that field. I was like, right now is the time to just run straight up the middle. You're going to score. You're going to win the game. Nope, they didn't do it. Those are the mistakes that Belichick and those guys up there are counting on that everybody's going to make because they're confident in their football. You know what I mean? When they hit to the field, they're confident that no matter what happened, if it's blood, mud, or whatever, we're just going to keep playing football straight through this. And at the end, the last few seconds, like Marv Levy used to say, last for a few 4 minutes of the game, if you end, we're going to make our push and win this thing. You know, don't get enamored with all the ups and downs in the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, and even in the early fourth. And then when it comes to 4 minutes, now let's get down. Let's still see who got the cojones to pull this thing off. And most guys fold.
Let's go to Dave in Rochester. Go ahead, Dave. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Great show. Great conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I think that Tom Brady is the single biggest difference in the dominance in the AFC East. And in my opinion, he is the number one quarterback in the history of the NFL. But he has a ripple effect in that organization to the extent that they don't have to go out and get high-priced players through the draft or through trade. They take guys like a Chris Hogan, a Julian Edelman, guys who may not necessarily have all the analytics or fit the cookie-cutter mold of 6'2 and having a 40-inch vertical leap and runs a 4.340. They take these guys that just either know how to play football or know how to get open, or they're teachable. And Tom Brady takes those guys. And, you know, they may be.
I interrupt you for that.
Oh,
I know,
yeah, go ahead.
I mean, because we don't always have a lot of time. It's the holidays. But, and I like this question because it poses something in my mind. Mm-hmm. How come when other teams have these players, other than Randy Moss, I mean, because when Randy Moss went up there, that was unfair.
Yeah.
That was just unfair having him up there.
Yeah.
He was unfair on any team. But all of these other guys, we've had some of those guys play for us,
mm-hmm.
and then they take them. And Hogan?
Yeah.
Was Hogan playing here in Buffalo?
Yeah.
This last
it was
year
your household name?
No. Brady makes them better, Ruben. I believe Brady makes them better.
Any quarterback will make you better if you're running the proper route and you're there on time and you catch
Brady
it.
I think Brady's a special
Well, you
talent.
Can count on him to deliver the passes that they're being asked to be delivered from a quarterback position. But you don't always – not every down do you have to stand in the pocket and throw the ball. There's plenty of ways to get down the field. You can run the ball. You can run the wildcat. You can run the wing tee. Mm-hmm. You know, you can run all of old Vince Lombardi's plays to get down the field if you have a strong enough idea about playing a game and taking advantage of what they're not good at.
Yeah, you know,
because they only got Brady.
I think Brady covers up the mistakes they make. I think he covers up personnel mistakes they make, drafting mistakes, free agents.
Yeah.
And I also think this, and you're a basketball guy.
Yeah.
Brady is Michael Jordan in his competitiveness, I think. He makes everybody else adhere to a higher standard mm-hmm. because he's so competitive. We saw it right here, mm-hmm. first series a couple
That's
of months
true.
Ago, you know, when he's yelling at his oh. first series and he's in the
I'll
face of
this.
Josh McDaniels.
I used to yell at the coordinators. Why they not?
No, the camera wasn't on you.
Yeah,
the camera wasn't on you.
Ruben?
But I think Brady's competitiveness –
Yes.
Lifts up everybody around him, not just yes. his talent, but how hard he competes and the way mm-hmm. where
I'll
he sets
this,
a standard.
When you that go is. Into that building, and I know from being there, when you go into that building, especially as a wide receiver or a running back, if you're catching passes from him,
mm-hmm.
if you are not where I need you to be when I need you to be there, you won't play. Because I'm
right.
never going to give you the ball,
right.
and I'm going to say, Coach, you might as well not put him on the field.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
never going to get the ball because you're not where I need you to be. So
yeah.
as you talk about, he's Michael Jordan – you know, in terms of competitiveness, Brady is like, look, all I want to do is win. That's
yeah.
it. That's all that matters to me is winning games. I need guys on the field that know where to be when I need them to be there.
Yeah.
I will deliver you the ball. And so what they do is, for me, the Patriots get the guys that fit their system. They don't have this system that, you know, the only time was when Randy Moss was there. Now
yeah.
you have Brandon Cooks. They're not really using him like
right.
they use Randy Moss. Maybe they will next year or something like
yeah.
that. But – pretty much, they get those receivers that aren't the fastest guys, use them underneath as an extension of their run game.
Mm-hmm.
You got Gronk. Gronk can do anything I need you to do and be there when I need you to be there. And I'm going to get you the ball.
Right.
I'm going to call out blitzes and all of that stuff. I'm going to get you the ball. You're going to, you know, all out. Get the ball. Don't try to make a crazy play. Just keep on picking up first downs. And
yeah.
they're so consistent at doing that every single play, every single week. And other teams, you press so much because
yeah.
they're so consistent that you end up messing up
yeah.
and giving them a game.
There yeah. you go. There you go.
So what do the Bills
do? He
is
the top. He is the top quarterback and to be admired, really.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a Dan Marino fan for obvious reasons. I went to Pitt, but Brady's a man. He's good.
So what do the Bills do? What's their best path to victory this Sunday in New England?
Well, how many people can they get to him
yeah.
as soon as possible? If not, like I said before, they have to tackle the people that are catching the ball, meet them violently when they're catching. So if you can't get to him, so the only other way is to get to his friends, you know, and that's his receivers. So stop them from making catches, separate them from the ball, make it tough for them to catch the ball, make Gronk make an acrobatic play, make everything they do have to be exceptional in order to – now, they have that capability of being exceptional, but if you constantly contest everything they do, they can break just like you.
Yeah.
So that's what type of confidence that you just take with you. You I mean, if you go after Brady too much with the blitz, all right, the receivers are open. All right, if you stay back and coverage them all day, maybe the coverage is so soft that they can easily make the catch. Well, just contest everything. They get in your DBs are near them when they hand in the face, hitting them hard, making them drop the ball, making them not run the correct routes. That is what the Bills. That's the only way. And give the ball to McCoy. And when you're on offense, don't try to think, oh, well, we got a quarterback over there, and he's Joe Montana, and he's just going to throw all down the field and score 40 points. All right. Don't Jordan didn't game. Score 60 every night.
Right.
Yeah. All right?
Right.
He didn't. He scored 30 a lot.
A lot.
Yeah, a whole lot. So you go in the game knowing, all right, if he scores, you know, 50 points, all right, he bested us that day. But if we can constantly be on him and make him carry the total load, one man can't carry that whole load for that team.
Don't play their game, basically.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what it comes down. Don't get into playing their game. Do what you do best. What this team does best, what they've gotten back to now is they sit number six in the league in rushing. Run the ball. Yeah. Don't try to get into a shootout with them throwing it down the field all crazy, because that is not your game. You are dead last in passing. So
yeah, but,
don't try to do it. Just run the ball. Play good defense, run the ball, control the clock.
I like what you said, and then run the ball. I'm a football purist. That's what I call myself. So anybody out there, I invented that.
Self-proclaimed. All right.
I am self-proclaimed. And football is an aggressive sport. You know, go out and play it. It's called, you got to hit people. You know what I mean? And it's a little intimidation in it. You know what I mean? Take it to heart that Gronkowski gave the dirty hit.
Yeah.
And you know, give everybody between the whistle, give everybody on the Patriots the business. And they'll look at you and be like, man, why are y'all so aggressive today? Because you hit my boy. Yeah. Well, it wasn't me, but you're going to get it too.
Get into certain games. I remember in high school, we played this team, Irvington High School.
And your rivals?
They were in our division, in our conference. They weren't our rivals, but we played them every year. Another inner city school in Newark, in Irvington, in New Jersey.
Right.
I mean, probably one of the worst cities you ever want to live in, right? Yeah. But they had very good football players.
Right.
And tough,
right,
hard-nosed dudes from the hood, really.
Yeah.
And I remember we went out there my sophomore year, my first time starting on varsity. And our running back was really good, right? So we get into the game, and he got smacked like three or four times in a row. Yeah. And he came back to the huddle, and he's like, yo. He was almost about to cry. He's like, yo, they're hitting hard out there.
and you could tell his
mind was out of it. You know, I'm in the huddle like, oh, you are done now for the game, you know. And you saw it the couple of weeks ago when they were hitting Brady. He got frustrated. Mm-hmm. When you hit Gronkowski, you be physical with Gronkowski, what happens? He gets suspended for a game. You know, he does something crazy. I was frustrated. Why were you frustrated? Because they were actually being physical with you after you're physical with guys. Yeah, all that's guys. Your game. Yeah. You know, so all you got to do, be physical with these guys. Football. Hit Brady, hit Gronk, hit the rest of those receivers. They'll get tired of being hit.
Right.
You know, and then they'll just – I mean, you still got to play mistake-free. Don't make the big mistake that will lose you the game, but they don't want
to
be hit.
I would say to the Bills, if you could do anything, take on a mentality I took on in my playing career. I walked on the field with some of the greatest. You know, I just mentioned Derek Thomas. I just rose off my mouth. And he's one of the greatest ever. But I didn't feel I was gonna get some too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I mean, I'm on the field too. Now they didn't send anybody else out there. Mm-hmm. I'm here.
Yeah.
So am I gonna fold in front of Derek Thomas and then have him come, you know, walking around in the football world with his chest out like I walked over Reuben Brown? No way, buddy. You might beat us, and you might like, well, that team. We always dust the Bills, but you're gonna know Reuben Brown. Ask Junior Seau. That's all. all of them. Ask Warren Sapp. Ask him. You could not. You may not disrespect the organization, the color, whatever, but you're going to say, man, there's a guy on that team that he don't care.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's the mentality you take in the Patriots. Okay, there's Jesus over there. All right. Okay. But he decided to play football, and I play too. So you got to pull out some superpowers. Right? If he don't pull out the superpowers, I'm playing just like he's playing, so I got just as good a chance to win. So you got to bring your superpowers to beat me, I mean, because I'm in the competition.
Yeah.
I come to play. So that's the mentality. That's what's going to win the game for the Bills. It's not going to be any trickery. It ain't going to be the Wildcat. It ain't going to be this, that, and other. They got LeSean McCoy, who can run the heck out of the football, run it until a tongue hang out. Richie Incognito is a bowling ball, Pro Bowl guard. Run behind him until everybody's sore.
Yeah.
You know?
Brady, just play football. Brady right now, in terms of competitiveness, just wanting to win, that will to win, will do anything to win. People talk about – you know, he cheats and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, look, his mentality is
to win.
To win. I ain't cheating, I ain't trying. I look at a guy in the NBA right now, Russell Westbrook. Same type of mentality. Yeah, just dog. I don't care if we're losing, him. I'm going to dunk on you right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go for a triple-double every game, and I'm throw my body around, and I'm just going, slam on you every time. That's Brady right
it's
now.
It's called competition.
But you got to match that.
Yeah,
it's
if you
called
match
competition.
It, they won't back down, but at least if you match it, they know, and you can end up beating them.
Yeah, you can get them.
You mentioned Pro Bowl. Before we let you go, Pro Bowls came out this week. You went to 9 Pro Bowls.
Yes, sir.
Did you just figure every September, well, this season will end up in Hawaii. I know I'll get there.
I think 2 years out of the year, I was, like, working to it.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I'm going to do this again. I'm going to do it again. 2 seasons, I really put it on my agenda. And then after that, I just was like, I'm going to just try to lay down as many good years as I possibly can because I've achieved the Pro Bowl, and I hope to get there. But you never know if you're going to get there.
Right.
And people yell about this popularity. That's right. It's a popularity contest. Are you good enough to be popular amongst the coaches and the players?
There's no fan vote when you're right.
Thank you. Yeah. No, and so I don't even justify the All Pro. Honestly, that's chosen by the writers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
media, that open media got the All Pro. I don't even justify. I don't even consider it. It don't even register. It means nothing to me. What means most to me is those 9 because those coaches and players. And I would hear people say, well, you got friends over there. And that. I don't have no friends on the D-line. You know what I mean? When I left Buffalo, there was only one other team that liked me, and it takes more than one other team to like you in order to be voted to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
So I could go on and on about the Pro Bowl vote and how people try to discredit it, but it's truly a great honor because that's your competitor.
Yeah.
Has to look at you and like, yeah, you were that good. I hated playing you, but you're good.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the coach has to say it. They're not just going to – coaches aren't that petty that they're going to legitimately say, hey, this year you're good, you know, or, hey, you've been good. You keep going. Coaches aren't going to be petty and be like, well, I want my guy. That only happens if you're the coach – coaching the all-star team, and you could say, I'll bring one of my guys.
Right.
You know, because somebody's not there, I'll bring one of my guys. But it's truly an honor. It's truly an honor, and they should take it back to Hawaii.
That's your best argument.
That's like
for
your second home, Hawaii.
Yeah.
I love Hawaii.
That's your best argument for the Hall of Fame, don't you think? 9 Pro Bowls?
Wow. I guess. Because, I mean, I would consider – that probably the ultimate honor in football is to have your competitors say that you're one of the best.
Yeah.
And when you make that list, and I was always either on 1 or 2 of the list. I was on first or the second. And, you know, I sat next to Bruce Matthews. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Mark Stepanski's going to the Hall of Fame. Will Shields in the Hall of Fame. Willie Rofe, Walter Jones. Names escape me, but the list is long. I even set my first year there, Richmond Webb was there. You know, Bruce Armstrong was there. All these guys I sat next to in meetings. Jonathan Ogden, you know what I mean? Corey Stringer, who passed away. It was really a personal, great experience because you are hanging out with the premier of your position. And I got the pictures to prove it. You know,
no, we don't doubt it. Come on.
All of us hanging out. And I made sure I enjoyed it and because it just meant that much to be amongst the best of that year. Yeah. That year's best. And I was in there.
That's cool. Yeah. Hey, Ruben, thanks for this. Have a great Christmas with your family. Yeah. And we'll get you. You're coming back next week? You doing a show with us?
Yeah, well.
Are you out of town? We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. We can work something out. We'll work something out.
But have a great holiday. And we'll talk to you. You're on the air Sunday, though. This Sunday, right, with Mike?
No, actually, it's Christmas.
Oh, there's
Christmas
no show. It's Christmas Eve.
So I'm going to watch the game and root the Bills on because we want them to take down the evil empire. Somehow. I watched Star Wars this week. So I want them to take them down somehow. But they got a tall order.
But I like the way you're approaching it.
Yeah. Go play football.
Yeah. I agree.
That's what we all want to do. Mm-hmm. Listen, the coaches are jealous. I'm putting it to you like
they
that.
They got a coach and can't play.
They can't play. They want to play. Trust me. I sit back and watch it. After a couple snaps, I'm like, man, I could have done that. Let me get in and do it. But I can't. My body won't let me.
Trust me.
But you a player, man, we watching you have a good time. Go out there and play your cones off. Get a ball to McCoy a ton. You know, give it to McCoy if you ever have a problem. And let's go play football, man.
Love it. Ruben, thanks.
All right.
Ruben Brown joins us every Thursday, and we'll hopefully get him back again in the next couple of weeks or so. Donald and I come right back after this, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Yep, we're back. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Our thanks to Ruben Brown. Ruben speaks the truth. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Yeah.
He kind of boiled it down for us. You know, just go play. Just go play. I mean, give it to Shady and get out of the way and go play.
It's crazy because we've all said that. Like, it's football.
Yeah.
Just go in there and play your game. Don't pay attention to who that is on the other side. Don't pay attention to, we're in Gillette Stadium. Any of that stuff. That's Bill Belichick over there. Just go play football. It's Tom Brady. Go play, you know. And that's why I say a guy like Russell Westbrook, he has that mentality. I don't care who you are. We going out to Golden State to play in Golden State. Guess what? I'm a dunk on you, Steph Curry. Like you're my son. I'm a dunk on you, Kevin Durant. I don't like you anyway, so I'm a dunk on you. I mean, that's his mentality. Yeah. Whoever's standing under there, you're going to get it. You're going to get it. Even if y'all beat us, you're going to know that I came to play, and I hope the rest of the team comes to play like I come to play.
I like it.
You hit him in the mouth. That's what it is. You got to be physical. The teams that have beaten the Patriots, whether it was the Giants twice in the Super Bowl, what they do, they hit Brady consistently in the mouth. Hit him in the mouth, and you get him off his mark. You know, you start hitting a Gronk. You start hitting Brandon Cooks. The rest of those receivers, Amendola, they will cough the ball up. Amendola, you've seen it when they lost to the Dolphins. There were a couple of plays where he was throwing to those receivers over the middle, and they got hit, and you see what? The ball come out. You just got to hit them, be physical, play your game. That's the biggest thing. Play your game.
Yep.
Don't press and try to play their game. Don't get into their game. When we beat them in 2011, we played their game because that was our game.
Yeah.
We scored points, you know, and we ended up just outscoring them. That's not this team's game. This team is – run the ball, play defense, slow that offense down, hold them to 20, 23 points.
Take the ball away.
Take the ball away. If you can get that, if you're hitting him in the mouth, maybe he'll throw one up to you. You know, but you got to capitalize when he does. You can't make the mistake of we're going into halftime and you're pressing so much and you make a mistake and now you don't get any points at halftime. They get the ball coming out and then they score or something like that. You can't do that. You have to play mistake-free, but you got to play football.
Here's a call from Aaron in Oregon. Go ahead, Aaron. You're on the air with us.
Oh, hey, guys. Hey, a pleasure to talk to you. I listen to you every day, but I usually listen tape delayed or whatever. So I'm on Christmas break, so I can listen to you in real time. I'm
great.
Loving this.
Thank you. Excellent.
Yeah,
thank you, Aaron.
I wanted to weigh in a little bit on the Patriots, but since I hate the Patriots and I hate talking about them, I wanted to say a little bit about the Bills first. The gal who was on the show the other day saying, where were you when the Bills last were in the playoffs? My son, yeah,
no callers.
And he's taking his PSATs and stuff. So It's been a while, and I'm really wanting them to win the next 2 weeks and get in there. On the Patriots, I do think it's Belichick. Because he's the GM and the coach, he's hiring the right people. I'm so sick of him, but I think he's the key.
Thank you.
He's the key. Okay.
Thank you, Aaron, in Oregon.
Thanks, Aaron. We got time for another call here. Let's go to Dan calling from Blaisdell. Hi, Dan. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how you doing, Grace? Just calling. It's not just about Belichick. I think it's more along the lines. You look at the Bills. You look at the Jets. You look at Miami. I mean, these teams, we are inconsistent. You look at how the Patriots, for, 15 seasons, they've stuck with what they know. You know, if you look at Tom Brady, if he has a bad game, do the New England Patriots throw him out of the game? No. They keep with him. They keep with what they know. That's how they win. You know, if you look at the Bills, like if Tyrod Taylor has a bad game, they switch over to Nathan Peterman. You can't do that. You know what I mean? You can't up a guy's ego, he gets you there, and then you knock him down. Like,
I don't know if that's entirely accurate about Tyrod. Tyrod, we all know the limitations in the Buffalo passing game, which, by the way, are still there pretty dramatically. But, we've talked about the decision to go to Peterman at length over the last month or so, and it came down to having a functional passing offense. They, coming off the New Orleans loss and the Jets loss preceding that, I believe they were worried that they were no longer functional in the passing game, made the switch. It backfired, 5 first-half interceptions. Now they're back to Tyrod, hoping for better, but again, they're 32nd in the league in passing attacks, passing offense, Donald. It's not a lot of evidence that it's much better, but now you got to live with it this deep into the season, I think.
Oh, yeah, you got to live with it. You have to do what you do best. You can't say, well, we got to get better than 32nd. We're trying to get into the playoffs right now, but we got to be better than 32nd in pass. You can't do that. Now going into – because to be honest with you, playoff football, you got to be able to run the ball and play strong defense. Yeah, you got to have the quarterback sometimes that can make the throws and all that stuff, but ultimately if you can play good defense – and you can run the ball, you can win games in the playoffs. So right now, don't even think about that whole dead last. You're going to have to make some plays passing the ball, but you need to be able to run the ball. You know, if you can't run the ball, there is an issue in this game because now you're playing into their hands. Now, with all of that being said, we know what Bill Belichick does. We know that he tries to take away whoever your best player is. Right now, that is LeSean McCoy. We know that they will try to take away that passing game. They are going to dare the Bills to throw the ball. So the Bills and Tyrod Taylor will have to throw it, and hopefully they can strike some fear in Bill Belichick's mind that, look, we can throw the ball if we want to. So you can continue to stack all of these guys in the box if you want to, but we can throw the ball. We've also run against these 8-man boxes for the last 3 years now, so we can do that too. That's what you have to do. You just got to go in there and do what you do best.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, have the injury report for you as far as practice participation today. We got that when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned from Tracy Wolfson from the NFL on CBS? She'll be on the sidelines Sunday when the Bills play the Patriots. We talked about we talked with Tracy about her impressions of the Bills so far this season.
I do think they're playoff worthy. I think it would be a tremendous story. What Sean McDermott's been able to do in this first year, not making the playoffs since 99, having the opportunity, what it would do for a fan base. But let's be realistic that this Bills team is in a rebuilding mode. So there's the future in mind, too. So, while there would be disappointment in not making the playoffs, I feel the Bills are in a really good position for the future, and they're only building and getting better. And I love what Sean McDermott's done.
Tracy Wolfson from the NFL on CBS. Also earlier today, Sharice Wright joined us, Bill's cornerback, who has been getting a lot of action in the last couple of games. Sharice Wright talked about facing the Patriots this Sunday.
I mean, we're up for the challenge. I mean, Coach McDermott does a good job just keeping us no matter what. I mean, we are who we are. They put their shoes on just like us. They put their uniform on just, they're human just like us. I mean, you've seen with the Dolphins. did to them, mm-hmm. you know, and okay. when they didn't have Gronkowski, but, you know, they were able to beat them, and we were able to beat the Dolphins. And any given Sunday in the NFL, man, anybody can lose that day.
Reese Wright going up against the New England Patriots. Well, what kind of Bills team will we have on the field this Sunday? The injury report is out today, the participation report. No practice today for defensive tackle Kyle Williams, another day off with his groin. No practice today for wide receiver Andre Holmes, who's come up with a neck injury. Kelvin Benjamin, limited work today with his knee. Charles Clay, limited with his knee. Cornerback E.J. Gaines, limited with a knee. Richie Incognito, a rest day, a day off. He was limited. LeSean McCoy, limited with his knee. John Miller, limited with his ankle. Nick O'Leary, limited with his back. Full participation for Deontay Thompson, wide receiver, and Nathan Peterman, the quarterback. That looks like a late-season injury list there, Donald, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It gets longer and longer the later you get into the season. The good thing is you got You got a bunch of guys who are limited, a couple of guys who are full. You don't have a bunch of guys that are out.
Yeah, and we get the updated one tomorrow that will designate out, questionable, et cetera. We got a good show tomorrow, too. Mark Kelso, Greg Cosell will join us, Lorenzo Alexander. Eddie Royal is going to join us, who knows a thing or two about Tyrod Taylor. All of that coming up on the show tomorrow. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our production crew today, production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltenick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, and Shelby Rush. Our producer is Jay Harris. Tomorrow, Friday, right before the big game against the New England Patriots, always the best day around here. Make sure you join us tomorrow starting at 12 noon until 3 p.m. Donald and I will be back tomorrow with the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.